720 WGN and a happy Saturday morning to you wherever you are in Chicago or elsewhere. John Hansen in for Matt Bubala on this rainy, dreary Saturday morning. And Jess, you played that song because that's one of Matt's favorite songs, right? That's one of his go-to songs that he loves.
Matt loves that song.
All right.
That was just an honor of him.
And I love it. Matt is out tonight and quite literally on the town, and he's not here today. By the way, Jess, I know you didn't intend it, but that Meet Me in the Middle, that could be an anthem for our current political state of mind and everything going on today in this world. I wish we could all meet each other a little bit more in the middle. I know that's not what you meant by it. I know it was definitely for Matt, but it had struck me a little bit there.
I was going for that, too.
Of course, yes. The deep meetings. The deep meeting. So, welcome to the show, everyone. We've really got a jam-packed 4 hours. I am here until 5 o'clock for Matt. Please join the conversation. 312-981-7200. We want you to jump on in. We are going to talk about the Van Dyke trial, but we are not going to beleaguer on it, I guess you could say. We're not going to stay on it for, of course, the entire 4 hours. We're going to do a little bit here on the open. We're going to talk with Brandon Pope, who is a reporter with me on our TV show, The Jam, which is on WCIU every morning, 6 to 8 a.m. He's been at this trial every single day. We're going to get his reaction and talk about what's next and some interesting takes also about how media has covered this trial and how media really got ready for today and his thoughts on that. Blockbuster Blake will be joining it too. We're going to talk movies as well, and I want to prime you all for that because that is where we really want some participation. Not only are we going to be talking about A Star Is Born and Venom, but also, you know, we're in Halloween season, and everyone's thinking about watching scary movies or spooky movies. So we want to hear from you about what's that great movie you love to maybe cuddle up on the couch with and get scared on, or that movie that just really creeps you out and makes you feel like in the Halloween spirit. 312-981-7200. And plenty more coming up on the back half of the show as well. Roger, how are you feeling here today?
I'm doing great. You know that.
I know
I'm
it as well.
Just in my happy place.
You're in your happy place, exactly.
Happy place, yeah.
And this is where things kind of go. We let loose in the 1 o'clock hour, Roger.
Oh, yeah.
So we hope
that. Got an update. Sorry to
interrupt. Go ahead.
We got an update on that accident on I-57. All lanes are now blocked inbound. I-57 at 119th Street. That's a very serious accident there. So if you are driving inbound right now on I-57, heading towards 119th. Actually, things are slowing up at 127th,
oh,
so you want to get off there earlier. So.
Doesn't surprise me. 119th in that area is where you start to get that curve around heading to the Dan Ryan. So with
and
these
the
slick conditions.
Slick.
Yeah, I was just going to say, slow down out there. I was driving down Lakeshore. Oh, Roger, I don't know if you mentioned this. You might have. Good news, everyone.
Yes.
I was driving southbound on Lakeshore Drive.
Did you have fun not seeing any construction?
I did. You know, the LaSalle, and you know, I drove it this morning, and there still was the barricades up.
Yeah.
So, or yesterday morning, I should say, technically. So yeah, the barricades are gone. Mm-hmm. The repaving was done last week, but the work over the LaSalle Bridge is all donezo. So I didn't see any northbound. I'll know at 5 a.m. when I head back the other way. But definitely southbound, everything is open, and it was nice to head on in. Although
they were supposed to have both sides open,
I think they are.
Tonight,
I bet they are
because of the race.
I just hadn't seen it.
Yeah,
I didn't take a look. You know, I was being safe, Roger. 10-2.
Eyes on the road, buddy.
Slick conditions out there. So slow down, everyone. Look, if you're driving out, wherever you may be here in Chicago, Illinois, you got time. We're here with you for the next 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
Slow down and be safe.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to have a good show. I'm going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to talk with Brandon Pope from The Jam coming up on 720 WGN. Okay, we're going to move right along here on the Matt Bubala Show. John Hansen filling in 1 till 5 a.m., and it's 1:17 on this Saturday morning. Obviously, the news that has dominated the headlines the past few days and into today here in Chicago was the Jason Van Dyke trial, of course, the guilty verdict for second-degree murder today. We're going to chat actually with Brandon Pope. He's a reporter on The Jam, WCIU, which you know a lot of listeners who listen to me because I talk about the show all the time. I also work on that show. Brandon, how you doing this morning? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, John. Happy to be here, man. Thanks a lot.
What a long day for you. Obviously, that's not where our true sympathies lies. But when I said it was Saturday morning, I just had sympathy for all those reporters. I mean, you guys have been working. You've been working hard on this story, man, ever since, 4 a.m. yesterday morning. Nearly 24 hours, bud.
Well, yeah, it's been a long day. But here's the thing. It could have been way longer. I mean, this trial has gone quicker than a lot of people overall anticipated it would. A trial like this, a big murder trial, especially when it's the first officer in like nearly a half a century in charge of murder, you expect that to go weeks for the verdict.
Right. And
we We expected to be sitting there for a long time. This took a matter of 7.5 hours total of deliberations.
Were you surprised? I guess I can tell in the tone of your voice you were surprised. But you and I had chatted that, you know, sometimes you get a Friday jury. Not to say that that necessarily influenced the situation, but anytime you got a sequestered jury and they're coming up on a weekend, you know, human instincts take over, and sometimes that jury wants to get the job done.
Yeah, well, that's a big part of it. And you know, there were a lot of questions in the media. All of us in the media were wondering, like, how fast will the jury do this, especially with the Chicago Marathon happening on Sunday? You know, you got the sequester. They're held up in the hotel there. So, like, how much will that play a factor? They also understand the fact that the CPD is trying to ramp up security and make sure they have the resources possible. But I think overall, I think the fact that it was a fast verdict was right away a sign that this was not a good look for Jason Van Dyke right away. And as you heard from the jurors afterwards, you know, they took the video into consideration heavily and made a quick decision based off that.
I wanted to ask about the tension throughout the trial. I heard the judge at the beginning of his remarks before the verdict was read discussing that the media had done a good job, had followed all the rules. Obviously, it's a tough trial to cover. What was the tension like in the room, in the courtroom, the days leading up to today and then today?
Man, let me tell you something. That judge.
What about him?
He deserves his own show. He is a character. He brought the energy. He is about the business. He tried to make sure things were snappy, quick, expedient. He demanded answers on time. And there was a tense moment today between him and Dan Herbert, the lead defense attorney, when it came to Jason Van Dyke and why he was absent from court for a moment yesterday. He threatened to revoke his bail, and he asked, do you want your client to go to jail? He stood up and said, do you want your client to go to jail? I'll throw him in jail right now. And so, you know, you have this energy and this big time enthusiasm and respect for this guy because he put so much energy into what he's doing. But overall, yeah, this judge, he's been quite a character. The moments in the trial and the courtroom have been tense. And when that verdict dropped, man, you could hear a pin drop.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There's nothing really unparalleled like the announcing of a verdict in news today. It's still one of those things where everyone gathers around the radio or their social media for that dramatic moment of the reading of it. I was hoping maybe, Brandon, you could expand on this. Right before the verdict was read, I wasn't watching on TV, but the judge, you know, offered everyone a chance to, if they couldn't handle themselves or stay composed on either side during the verdict being read, that people excuse themselves. And then I heard him say thank you to someone. Did anyone leave the courtroom at that moment?
Yeah, a woman did leave the courtroom. The judge gave an opportunity for people that, you know, were really emotionally invested in the trial to step away if they needed to, because he threatened. He said, hey, I'm not going to take any outbursts. I'm not going to accept any, you know, shouts or, you know, anything to disturb court. So if you need to step out, if there's a moment where you feel like, hey, this is going to be a really emotional verdict for me, I'm not going to be able to handle it, you're allowed to just leave court right now. He gave him that opportunity. One lady did. She was in the spectator section for the McDonald family, so we're assuming she was with them. But obviously, tons of tension behind this, tons of people really watching this verdict, and the city bracing for what's going to happen, and America overall, too. A big moment.
I wanted to ask you, I saw you tweet about this, and you got to follow Brandon on Twitter. Hey, what's your Twitter handle again that people can follow you at?
At BPOPE TV, BPOPE TV.
And that's what we call him on TV, by the way, BPOPE. So BPOPE, I got to ask, I was on the radio or on WGN earlier yesterday during noon when we actually heard that the verdict would be read at 1:45. And I talked a little bit about the tension in the city, and I kind of had a moment's pause afterwards. I saw some TV reporters saying that the city is like a powder keg ready to explode. Did some people go overboard in hyping, I guess, what could possibly happen if there was a not guilty verdict? Is that wrong for people in whether it's radio, TV, online, to play this up as the city as a powder keg, or do you feel that was justified?
know, it's interesting, John, because I feel like given recent situations with police misconduct and big-time court trials, we're looking at Ferguson and Baltimore, what happened with those cases. It's understandable why people would look at that and be like, okay, there could be a, you know, big-time riot, big-time situation here. When you think about Chicago and the city of Chicago, there's a lot of pride in this city, you know, south side, west side Chicago. They're not trying to burn up buildings. They're not trying to loot CVS. There's not been a riot in Chicago since 1968. And I talked to a lot of activists, the Black Lives Matter president and many others who told me that talks of a riot or any violent protest was way overblown. They just felt like, you know, the way it was said to me, if we weren't going to riot during the Laquan McDonald video release, then we weren't going to riot during the verdict itself. So,
right.
You know, I think that played a big factor. I never considered for any measure that there'd be a riot at all. Because people in the city, they respect their city. They respect the buildings, the structures, the history. Like I said, 1968. 1968 is the last time there was a riot in Chicago. I think the people here, while the tension was real, there's that racial tension there, obviously, that anger towards many, police, the mayor. I don't think powder keg was appropriate because I don't think people were ready to burn things down.
Right.
And from everything I've heard expressed from activists, that was never the case. And it's sad because sometimes it's conflated that riots and protests on the same thing.
Right. And there's also protests versus demonstration. You know, like there's a lot of buzzwords going on about what people were afterwards. So I did want to ask also, because I imagine.
What happened today? People called what happened today protests, and they were just kind of demonstrations.
So I wanted to ask about what we saw afterwards, because we saw marches up and down Michigan Avenue. I saw a couple of people on the text line, like saying, oh, well, they like the verdict, then why are they protesting or demonstrating? And I guess I wanted to ask, Brandon, if you could have gotten a sense. Obviously, everyone has their own individual opinions on the mood of those people who did still march down the street with their message. Was it celebratory about the verdict, or was it a sense of some relief? I think we've seen some cases where it almost looks certain in other cities where police officers were going to be found guilty, and then they found ways to get off, or rightfully or wrongfully. So was there a sense of relief that this verdict came the way that these people wanted, or was it celebratory, or was it a combination of both?
You know, John, I think the best word for it was a sense of pride, a sense of maybe a finally this happened. I think people were surprised that this happens. The overall mood that I was getting from people was that they didn't expect this type of verdict. And so when you saw the demonstrations downtown on Michigan Ave, you know, you hear a chant of, hey, 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 goodbye. People were very much happy to see this. But the other tone was there's still more work to be done. William Calloway talked about how they are looking to do more with, you know, targeting the police themselves, targeting the economics of Chicago, targeting where the funds are going in Chicago, and targeting the mayoral race. Obviously, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, he's announced he's not going to seek re-election. They called for him to step down. That's likely not going to happen, but, you know, they're looking at who's going to lead us into the future, who's going to show up to the ballot box and, you know, decide who's going to lead us to the future. That's been a big part of the conversation. So the overall mood has been hope. I think hope is really the word, a sense of hope, but also a sense that there's more work to be done.
You know, I was chatting with Domati, our buddy Domati Pongo over here at GN Radio. I know you know him well. And listening to some of the clips that he had gathered. And, you know, from a lot of leaders of the protest, you know, we make these things such black versus white issues, not necessarily racially, but of course they fall down those lines sometimes. But I wanted to ask about the idea of a lot of leaders in the community were saying things immediately after the verdict, saying, we know that there are a vast majority of good cops versus these rogue cops out there, or police officers that do the wrong thing. Was there a lot of that discussion that you heard of that, yes, this is the right verdict, but even from leaders of the community saying, this is still not, we're not trying to put all police you know, we're not trying to indict all police here.
Definitely. The prosecution themselves even said they hope that this verdict does something for police and community relations. You know, obviously, the Chicago Police Department has been really the focal point of what's going on here with the Van Dyke trial. The federal government themselves has really put the microscope on the Chicago Police Department, and there's been questions about the training methods of the Chicago Police Department themselves and whether the training methods they put forward for their officers are actually appropriate in terms of use of force and use of deadly force in particular. So that's really an important aspect when it comes to this. But there's still many people who feel like, hey, there's still good police officers out there. The prosecution really stressed that, and we've got to make sure we're working together and understanding that the good cops are good cops, but the bad cops have to be held to a certain standard.
Hey,
and obviously, the other thing, too, Fraternal Order of Police, they're pushing back heavy.
Yeah.
They feel like, you know, they made an interesting comment. They said, surgeons make mistakes. Surgeons jeopardize life. Surgeons kill people, but they don't get prison time. Not the prison time police officers do. So I thought that was an interesting comment.
Yeah, for sure.
Coming from them.
Hey, last question here, Brandon. We have a question that I can't take the phone call, Doc, but I can see out of Kansas City, so one of our listeners wondering, and I know the answer, but I hope you could elaborate, was this caller wants to know, did the officer have the option to have a trial by judge instead of a trial by jury? Yes, he did, right?
He sure did. He had that option. You have to figure he chose a jury trial because of the makeup of the jury.
Right.
The makeup of the jury, you had one black person on there, one Latino person. The rest was white. And so in a highly racialized case, that would usually factor, you would think, in his favor based on the way the defense painted their argument. However, as we've heard from jurors, they based a lot of their decision off of what they saw in the Laquan McDonald shooting video. And what they heard from Van Dyke himself about what happened that night did not match up to what they saw for themselves in the video. And so that ultimately played a factor. And so for people that, you know, were concerned about the racial makeup of the jury, maybe a sign of hope there that maybe the racial makeup didn't matter. People just, like, looked beyond that, watched the evidence, and made a decision for themselves.
Yeah, it reminded me of the Manafort trial in Washington, where you had a couple Trump supporters on the jury who said they tried every which way to find Manafort not guilty, but eventually, you know, the evidence speaks for itself. And it does give you a restored sense of faith in the American jury system, that jurors, whether you agree or disagree with their ultimate decision, are at least able to take off their political, racial, discriminatory blinders, whatever their backgrounds may be, and look at evidence in case, and that certainly does give you hope. All right, Brandon, I know I need you to get some sleep, man.
Yeah, I need to get some sleep too, man. But hey, appreciate being on. Love talking with you, bro.
Yeah.
You know what? I think this is a big moment for Chicago. I look forward to seeing what happens next. But this is history. Not just for Chicago, but America's watching. This is the first time we're seeing a cop be held accountable for shots fired against an unarmed person. And in this highly political time, and we're talking about all these instances where young black kids are being gunned down by police, you know, this is a very relevant, relevant verdict.
All right, Brandon Pope from The Jam, thank you so much for your time. Have a good one, all right?
Hey, thanks, man. Have a good one.
All right. Brandon Pope, you can follow him on BPopeTV on Twitter. Great Instagram account, too, and does great work every day, weekday mornings, 6 to 8 on The Jam. All right, Roger, I went a little over there with Brandon, but it was good stuff talking about Jason Van Dyke. And, obviously it was huge news. And, man, that there was a tension leading up to that verdict. Maybe we shouldn't describe it as the powder keg, and I think that that's a broader discussion in media, you know, to how we describe the situation leading up to things, especially people that aren't talking to the community leaders. All of them were saying that that riot was not part of the vocabulary, no matter what the verdict came in.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly a good lesson for all of us that get paid to just kind of fill time sometimes on air. And we really need to choose our words carefully and consciously there. So,
extremely carefully. And to not, because words have meaning.
Yeah.
And to use vocabulary that could or could not add to a negative effect.
Yeah.
It doesn't move things in a positive way.
Right,
and,
exactly.
And, you know, the news media, is supposed to report on what is happening.
Right.
We leave the speculation up to commentators and show hosts.
Right.
To speculate within reason, given the evidence. But we report on what's happening, and were anything to have happened one way or the other. We've been airing reports from Ryan Burrow about what did happen
right
after the verdict.
Yeah, the speculative stuff ahead of time is dangerous.
And we talked about this before the show. Unfortunately, with 24/7 social media, there is a dire need to fill space.
Right.
And I think that leads, unfortunately, in this day and age, that leads to a lot of negative stuff.
So. Well, and there's also when you're filling time just to get to, I mean, you start to try and speculate. And I don't think it's sometimes even meant to be that. I think, like, because I was on the business lunch and I mentioned the tension, but I wasn't out interviewing a bunch. You know, I was trying to paint a picture of what I felt, but that needs to be made clear. That isn't necessarily what everyone else is feeling.
Exactly.
So, anyway, speaking about what's happening, Roger, it's time for the news. Take it away. 720 WGN, Jess and I.
Da, da, da,
yeah, there you go, Roger. Actually, the reason why was we were trying to find good music coming up for this little game that we're going to play, Roger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know,
little theme kind of fancy game show music.
That's what we're looking for here.
Okay.
So 720 WGN, John Hansen in for Matt Bubala until 5 a.m. We're also playing, so we're going to play the game show, which, I don't know, I decided to call it Finish the Headline. Do we like that name? Where I read you a news story, and there's I take out the one important link, and we need people to guess what that important piece of information is.
Okay.
So we'll call it Finish the Headline. Yeah. But the other game we're playing, Roger, is Where in the World is Matt Bubala?
Oh, I thought you were going to say Carmen Sandiego.
No, see, that was the joke, Roger. So Matt's out with friends tonight, and that's why he's not on the show. He deserves a great night out with his friends and his buddies, but he's somewhere in downtown Chicago, we believe, based on the selfies that we're getting. If you go out and you see Matt Bubala out at a bar or a gutter, let us know, 312-981-7200. Where's Matt Bubala? Oh, I don't want to say exact. Just let me know exactly where he is. But I don't want people to actually swarm. They got to find him.
Yeah,
that's
that
the game.
Takes away the fun of it.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, just do we have that game show music ready for what we think is? Let's call it Finish That Headline. There we go. We run a yes. This is right, Jess. We run a tight ship here. Roger, so the rules of the game are pretty simple. I'm going to read you a lot of the headline, and then you got to finish it, okay?
Okay, I'll do my best.
Well, you know, you're a news guy. You should know all these things.
Yeah, okay, sure.
All right. This is a story of an... Yeah, and you'll keep... Yeah, just keep that going, Jess, and hit repeat on this thing. Boom, I love boom, this song.
Boom, boom,
okay.
I like it.
So this is out of Franklin Lakes, which I don't know exactly Franklin Lakes.
Okay.
I will say before this that everyone has recovered from this accident. There's nothing funny about a car accident, of course. Everyone's okay.
All right.
But a teen driver veered into oncoming traffic and slammed into a sedan. A couple people had to go to the hospital.
Ouch.
They had some injuries.
Yeah.
What was she doing that led her to swerve into oncoming traffic? Again, everyone is okay.
There's so many
312-981-7200. What was she doing? Roger, any initial guesses?
Well, I got to pick the main one, texting.
Right, that's a common one that everyone would go to. No, she was not texting.
Changing her clothes.
Did you Google this, Roger?
No. No.
You got it right.
Oh, you're kidding.
That was,
no way.
Jess had a guess. We didn't even get to the listeners.
I'm sorry.
That's the first one, yes. A
I'm
teen
so
driver
sorry.
Was trying to put on a sweatshirt when she veered into oncoming traffic. She was having difficulty putting it on. I don't know why. I mean, I've tried to take off a coat while driving
because
I'm too hot.
But you don't have to lift it over your head.
No, not a sweatshirt.
You have to put
not
it over
a,
your head.
If it's a zip-up, maybe you could do it. But by the Jeep ended up spinning around the other way. So,
oh, my goodness.
I know. It is really scary, so I'm not trying to make too much light out of it. Again, luckily, everyone seems to be okay in this accident. But
I want to apologize to the listeners for stealing the first guess.
Yeah, exactly. Good thing I have other ones ready to go.
Goodness.
All right. Yeah, otherwise you would have ruined it. But hey, great guess there, Roger.
Wow.
Okay, here we go. This one comes out of Ohio.
Okay.
A fundraiser for a youth football team is getting some pushback. It's a raffle for kindergartners and first graders with the Little Miami Youth Football League. They sold 500 tickets for this raffle at the drawing at the end of the month, but some parents wonder if it was the best choice for youth football. What are they auctioning off? What is the raffle fundraiser? You hear of bake sales, you know.
Right,
so
right.
What are they raffling off that might be inappropriate for kindergartners and first graders?
All right, so I'm not going to guess.
Don't.
You 312,
know why? Because you're going to get it right.
I know.
312-91-7200. What is the inappropriate thing that they are raffling off for this youth football? Jess, any guesses? You had your hand up for the last one.
Yeah, that's because
Hey, you want to turn on the music on your end so we can hear you a little bit? All right, Jess, what do you think? You got an answer?
Well, for the last one, I had a really good idea. I first was going to say she was doing her makeup.
That makes sense. That's a good guess, yeah. Roger, why didn't you go with that one? The game would have lasted longer.
Because I wear a beard?
Yeah.
Oh, we have some callers.
All right,
maybe.
You go do that. Bring that music back up, Jess. Okay, so again, a fundraiser for a youth football team getting some pushback. So, Gina Pennycuff, which is a great name, is one of the people quoted here.
That's
She's
cute.
A mother and a substitute teacher. She got a Facebook message about it, and she said it was disturbing. It just doesn't seem to mix. So we got to guess, what were they raffling off for this youth football team? Did you ever do any bake sales or anything, Roger, for the kids? Any raffles? I've heard of candy bars.
You know what? Our daughter was in Girl Scouts.
Okay,
so
the cookies.
So the cookies, and I remember one year when I was working at City Hall, I went through all of the fifth and sixth floor offices. Now, the fifth floor is the mayor's office, and we were on the sixth floor in the press office, and I knew everybody on both those floors. I didn't drive at that time. I didn't drive to work.
Right.
I always took the public transportation. I had to find every sports bag in our apartment that I could find, and I was loaded down with about six sports bags filled with cookies. And that was the last time I did that at work.
Yes.
So I'll use that as a qualifier for a fundraiser. She did okay. But I gave up after a while because I didn't think of how was I going to get all these cookies downtown.
Right, right.
When I was selling them.
Yeah, you got all those big bags.
Yeah.
There you go.
That is crazy.
Well, we got the phone lines lighting up for what this one was.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and go to Pauline. Pauline, you're on 720 WGN. What do you think that they were raffling off?
I think they were raffling off a gun.
They were! It was a gun! A gun raffle! Pauline, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't like it, but I'm assuming that's what they were doing because someone had done that before, I think, in Florida.
That doesn't surprise me. You look,
yeah.
I'm not even an anti Second Amendment person. I don't really, that's not the debate I'm trying to get into, but this is for kindergartners and first grade teens. Isn't that, I just think it's a little tone deaf in my opinion.
Yes, I know, but that's actually what they did after one of the school shootings in Florida.
Ugh.
Someone was raffling off, they had it scheduled to raffle it off. And they went ahead with it.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, Pauline, congratulations. I wish I had a bunch of prizes for you, but I don't. Thanks so much. Where are you calling from, by the way, Pauline?
I'm on my way home from work, Chicago.
All right. Well, have a great night, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Pauline. Bye. Yes, they raffled off a gun. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we got more Finish the Headlines here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Jess is dancing in the producer's studio, and Roger, you're bobbing your head. You can't do anything but do that when you hear this song.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
All right, we're playing Finish the Headline, and you got to fill in the gap, 312-91-7200. You can text or you can call in. Let me know what you think is the end of the story. All right, so do you have any doorstops lying around, Roger, in the house?
Oh, I used to use them all the time at school.
All right.
They were very precious.
All right, so there was a doorstop that ended up being worth $100,000. What could be used as a doorstop that was innocuous at first but turned out to be worth $100,000? This is at a Michigan farm, Central Michigan University. It was 22 pounds, whatever this was.
What?
And,
That's a heavy doorstop.
Yeah, it was a big doorstop. A new owner got it, and all of a sudden they were like, oh, let's take a look at this. Any guesses, Roger? You think you know it. I don't want you to get it too early.
Yeah, well, you said how much did it weigh?
22 pounds.
All right, so I'm thinking it's not your traditional diagonal cut, stick under the door doorstop.
It is
this
not.
This is a large piece of earthenware, and that I think that somehow they broke it open, and there was, or there was something embedded in it, like a rare mineral.
Maybe you're getting close. Let's take a look at the text line from the 440. They say it was a meteorite. And it was.
Ooh, there you go.
That is correct. A rock that was used as a doorstop for decades at a Michigan farm identified as a meteorite valued at $100,000. They say it was 22 and a half pounds, identified by the Department of Earth and Atmospheric Sciences. And the chunk of iron and nickel valued for 100 grand by the Smithsonian. It was verified. And again, it was used as a doorstop for several decades. And some recovered in the 1930s. Now we got the piano beat. Now we got ragtime.
Yeah, really? I like this.
Just forgot to hit replay on this thing or loop it or just wanted to change it. Okay. All right, that's one. I don't know. I got more headlines for you. Ready, Roger?
Okay.
It's time to play nay or finish that headline. I should remember what the name of the darn game is. Okay. All right. Police in Gilbert, Minnesota have received several reports of birds that appear to be I almost gave away the answer.
That appear to be behaving properly.
Right, they are flying into windows.
Okay,
they're flying into cars. They're acting confused, and the police are getting a bunch of calls. More prevalent than past year. You know, you see birds flying into things sometimes, but they're
especially in downtown Chicago. Yes, with the big buildings and the lights.
They do big collections of these birds. The Field Museum gets involved.
I saw that one just the other day. Yeah.
But the police says, don't call us because they know what is happening. Do you know what's happening to these birds?
Actually, I do because I've been following the story.
312-981-7200.
You said I'm in news.
I know. Why are there so many birds flying into cars, into windows in Gilbert, Minnesota?
They're making a mess all over the place, and some of them are loud.
Yeah, well, I imagine. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So they actually are collecting, obviously, the birds, and some of them are, they're not all dying. They're surviving.
Just
walking
just
around.
Very high, strangely.
Yes, and
For birds.
It's not only in Minnesota. 312-981-7200 if you know what's wrong with the birds. They've seen many incidences across this. It's not only in Minnesota, but this is where they're getting a lot of police calls.
Right.
Jess, do you have any guesses on what this could possibly be? Actually, you get the phone call. Why don't you answer that phone call there? 312-981-7200. Yeah, but Roger, it is interesting how the Field Museum collects these birds.
I saw that was the most ridiculous thing. They have drawers and drawers and drawers filled of hundreds of thousands of birds, all tagged.
Yeah.
Of birds that have flown into buildings in downtown Chicago.
And
they have saved them all.
Well, there's a group that goes around and collects them.
Oh, my God.
They go every morning or a couple mornings a month, and they go throughout the streets and through downtown early in the morning before all the pedestrians get there. And that's what they do. Hey, okay, so what's wrong with these birds? We're going to go to Ken in Bellwood. Ken, you're on WGN. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, John. They're drunk on berries.
They're drunk. The birds are drunk on berries. Yes, the intoxicated birds. The berries are fermented early because of either an early thaw, a late thaw. I don't really know the exact things. Ken, how did you know that? Have you met a drunken bird before?
Yes, I did.
Oh, gosh, really?
Yeah, my neighbor's got a tree that has berries, and they eat them, and they're kind of drunk.
What do they do when they're drunk? Do they wobble around?
Yeah, they kind of wobble around, hit the windows, whatever.
Right. Is there a bird rehab or a place we can take these things?
Yeah, Trailside Museum in like Cook County.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, Ken, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it.
All right,
so drunken birds. All right, Roger, one more for you here, okay?
All righty, and now that my computers have completely frozen.
Right, exactly. Oh, Jerry chimed in on 630, FUI, flying under the influence. Yep, that's exactly what it was. Okay, so New Orleans police are trying to solve a robbery, but they got a real big break in the case. Two people mugged a woman, they stole her phone, but they've got a giant break in the case, pretty obvious break in the case. They haven't caught these two suspects, but it won't be too long until they do. Can you guess what the big break in the case is? Think dumb criminals.
Okay, now,
a stolen phone.
A stolen phone.
But there's a giant clue that just came in, and they're able to, well, to show it to people, and they might catch these criminals a little earlier than a normal case. 312-981-7200. What's the big break in the case?
I'll guess, like, the most obvious thing.
Okay.
They dropped their wallet.
No, they did not drop their wallet. No. Nope. They still have their wallet on them, their credit cards, no IDs dropped at the scene. I'll tell you, it has something to do with the phone itself. 312-981-7200. Finish the headline. This is out of New Orleans. They still haven't caught these robbers, but they are going to soon. Let's say we got a good look at these robbers. Again, they stole a phone out of New Orleans.
So
they got a big break. What could be the worst thing you could do if you steal someone's phone?
I'll let someone else guess.
Jess is going to get it. Jess, go ahead. Okay. What did they do? What did these robbers do?
I'm turning down the music for a quick second. Did they take a Snapchat of themselves?
They took a selfie of themselves.
My God.
And the woman has all of her photos attached via iCloud. So even though she doesn't have her phone, she's able to see her phones, whether it's on her iPad or her computer or something. So all of a sudden, to the iCloud comes a selfie of the two robbers. So they'll be caught pretty soon. That was good timing, by the way, Jess.
I know. I planned it out that way.
That was really good.
You might have to kind of fill a little here because both my computers
are they gone?
Crashed.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we can fill. That's totally fine. Are you going to start to restart?
Fingers, I've already done that on one, and it still didn't help.
What happens if they never come back, Roger? Do you remember the news enough? Have you memorized the headlines enough?
Pretty much. A lot of stuff's happened.
We have an
back
engineer
to you.
For that.
And Northwestern and the Hawks are playing today.
Well, you know, Roger,
which is all that really matters.
Well, right now, Roger, I used to be a traffic reporter. I could do your traffic for you. That's no
true.
Problem.
Take a look out the window.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But yeah, if you want to do a couple, take like an early break, if that.
We can do
possible.
That. You know what, Roger? We're just waiting for this computer to maybe restart, right? I do want to tee you up for a couple things we're going to talk about.
Okay. All
so
right.
Blockbuster Blake is going to come on in a little bit, just after the news, whenever the news happens.
They're still frozen.
And we're going to talk about big movies that are coming out. A Star is Born. We're also going to be talking about Venom, but also chatting about just the scary, creepy movies that just kind of put you in the Halloween spirit. A lot of them might be the slasher films that we know of, and maybe you have a favorite kind of Halloween themed movie, but just sometimes the ones that even aren't Halloween themed, the ones that creep you out, that make your that give you the biggest goosebumps, make your hair stand on it. Yes, the heebie-jeebies. So whichever ones give you the biggest heebie-jeebies, we're gonna do that. And then also, Roger, in the three a little bit later, I've got a great story about some poor two-year-old doing something absolutely accidentally horrendous that his parents are, I mean, not horrendous in a terrible way, but they've lost out on some money because of what their two-year-old son did.
Yeah.
It's a really funny story if it wasn't the fact that it cost this couple $1,000.
Yeah.
But Roger, I want to start having you think through and picking your brain on what's the worst thing in a fun way that your kids ever did.
That my kids
ever
did?
That's what I want to hear. And I think there's some parents out there that have some funny stories. I have something that my older brother did that just, it makes us laugh to the, now we laugh about it.
Yeah.
But at the time there was not a lot of laughing. All right, Roger, any, it's still frozen because we can take a quick commercial break and give you a little more
both
time.
Both of them are, and I've restarted them twice already.
All right, well, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to read this legal because we got to do that.
Yeah, you got to do that.
And then I'm going to take a quick commercial break and hopefully we'll be back with the news. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. This is, of course, 720 WGN Chicago. Quick commercial break, and then hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll have the news. We'll have something coming up after this break. 720 WGN. This song puts you in a good mood. A happy Saturday morning, everyone. 212. John Hansen filling in for Matt Bubala on the Saturday morning. By the way, if anyone can call in and let us know where Matt Bubala is, I'm sure we can wrangle up some prize for you. He's, I don't know, the bars are closing, some of them, so he's going to be wandering between a couple of them, I bet. But, you know, some of those clubs are open till 4 or 5. So if you see Matt Bubala on the streets of Chicago, let us know where he is, and you'll win a prize. But we're going to move on to, do you have any ideas, Roger?
Of where he is?
Yeah, old haunts maybe that you used to go to.
Oh, my. So if those old haunts have closed for a long... I think the city closed those after we got done with them. That was a long time ago.
So while we look for Matt, we got Blockbuster Blake joining us on 720. Blake Stubbs, how you doing, man?
Hey, how have you guys been?
Oh,
I've been at the movies all evening, so getting ready for tonight.
Yeah, well, you're doing your research. So, Blake, we're going to talk about the new movies coming up, but I want to tee up and start getting some texts and phone calls. 312-981-7200. Join this conversation, because it's a fascinating one. Certainly one that's fun, because, you know, Halloween... Are you okay there, Roger?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes.
Are you sneezing into the microphone? You know, there's an off button on that thing, Roger. Anyways,
yeah, someday I'll find it.
I don't know. No indication of it yet.
No.
You know, movies that really just make your, give you goosebumps, make your hair, the heebie-jeebies, as you said earlier, Roger. 312-91-7200 as we get to Halloween. Because, Blake, there is something about the crispness in the air, the Halloween spirit that does make you kind of want to, I don't know, get on the couch and be frightened by a movie, right?
There is. I think part of it, you know, for me, has to do with the fact that this is allergy season for me, so I don't want to be outside doing anything else. I'd rather sit at home, close up a place, ride out what I can of that air conditioning, I guess, up until it gets too cold. But, no, I mean, this is also, you know, a prime programming time on television for a lot of, you know, Halloween-oriented programming, or at least, I guess we could call it, like, fall transition programming.
Right.
Because that's essentially what it is. I mean, they're going to bust out all the hits. You know, I mean, I know we're probably going to get a lot of text about it. You're probably going to get three of them from me, but Hocus Pocus is going to be mentioned multiple times.
It certainly is.
While I'm with you tonight.
Not necessarily a scary movie, but that's just kind of a feel-good, fun one.
Certainly a festive movie for this time of year. And another one like it for me growing up, because and you'll hear me say this again around Christmas time, but, you know, Peanuts. It's a great pumpkin. Charlie Brown, yeah, it has a special. And I'll mention, you know, Charlie Brown Christmas special. But there's a lot of the feel-good stuff. If you're not really into the scary type of, you know, films or shows that are, you know, rolled out around this time of year, there's always a lot of programming that you can turn on that are, you know, family-friendly. But also, you know, just enjoyable. It doesn't have to be a thriller, chiller, you know, got to sit there and, you know, have goosebumps. You can just kind of kick back and enjoy it and take in the seasonal change.
Absolutely.
Because that's the big thing about this holiday, is that it really is ushering in a complete and utter, you know, seasonal change.
Right. All right, Blake, we'll get those texts in, 312-981-7200, movies you love to watch around the Halloween time. But let's talk about some of the new releases that are out. And, man, there's a lot of buzz around A Star Is Born. And for the most part, I've read mostly positive reviews. I did read one negative review. Well, you can talk about that. But, Blake, overall, your thoughts?
Well, A Star Is Born. So both of the movies that I saw tonight were actually shot by the same cinematographer. His name is Matthew Libatique, and he's an Oscar-nominated cinematographer. And I'm going to, this ushers in sort of my review of A Star Is Born. I thought this was a beautifully shot film. Which is probably not the big reason a lot of people are rushing out to see it.
Right.
But it has a lot of great concert photography. In fact, it's very intimate concert photography.
What do you mean by concert photography?
So, Bradley Cooper's character, this is written, co-written by Bradley Cooper, directed by Bradley Cooper, and starring Bradley Cooper, and also Lady Gaga, which I'm sure everyone is well aware based on the marketing campaign for the film. But it's about an up-and-coming songstress who, you know, sort of befriends this rock-living legend whose career is kind of dying out. And they sort of have this this simpatico nature about their relationship, and it blossoms into something very special. And a lot of that takes place on the stage in front of live crowds through music. And so this film, you know, you're seeing behind the curtain. You're seeing what their lives are like, and you know the demons that they battle and the obstacles they're overcoming personally, specifically for Gaga's character, but also Cooper's character. You keep getting layers peeled back and exploring more about him. And also, when they go on tour or when they're performing live, you feel like you're there, but it's like you get the best seat in the house because the camera doesn't really rely on a lot of heavy crowd shots or wide shots. It's all, you're on the stage. It's like you have a very first person point of view of what it would be like to be up close and feel live performance. And I felt like this movie captured, and you know, as someone who's done some live performance, not as a singer, but on stage as an actor, it took me there. And I really connected with a lot of the performances, and specifically, you know, this movie's going to pull, I think, quite a few Oscar nominations. I was kind of like making the list as I was walking out of the theater, and you know what you're hearing, this hype train that this movie has picked up, it's for real, in my opinion. This is a movie people need to go out and see. There's a few warnings, though. I mean, there's foul language, there's drug use and alcohol, there's definitely some nudity. So, you know, if your kids are big Lady Gaga fans and you're not okay with them seeing nudity, maybe they need to wait until they're a little older to see this.
Yeah, Blake, you just issued a bunch of warnings, but I think you just sold a bunch of tickets, too, by talking about that.
Yeah, well, and again, I mean, like, I walked out of this movie and I was feeling something.
Uh-huh.
That tells you. Like, I mean, this is a movie that if you don't connect while you're watching it, it wasn't a movie you should have gone to see in the first place. But I can't really think of anybody that I talk to on a daily basis who doesn't want to go see this based on the trailer or the music video for the song that'll, you know, Shallow, which will likely be nominated for best song at the Oscars. And if I'm, you know, placing bets, I'd say it's going to win as of right now.
It's always interesting when performers cross over from stage or song to the film. Mm-hmm. And Lady Gaga, obviously a really creative artist, and you know her music videos alone are theatrical performances and always have been. She's great on stage. How does she come across in this movie?
This is going to be, if you're not familiar with the way that she has transitioned into acting through television, specifically American Horror Story, mm-hmm. the charisma factor that makes Gaga special as a performer and an artist, she's sort of reserved at the beginning when you see her in this film, and she starts to grow and blossom into, well, the Gaga that we know and love, you know, I as a fan. But at the same time, the performance, the actual acting performance, it is one of the best performances of the year.
Really?
Regardless, actor or actress, it doesn't matter. I mean, this is one of those things that, you know, we've been hearing, you know, critics are talking about it. It killed at the festival circuit. It was one of those things where it's like, oh, that Lady Gaga movie's really big. You know, noting, by the way, that Bradley Cooper, one of the best actors of his generation, is directing this. He was a co-writer on this. He co-wrote it with the guy that wrote Forrest Gump, Eric Roth. So, I mean, you know, like a lot of stars aligned, not to like just pull a word from the title of the film, but a lot of stars aligned to make this movie happen. I mean, this is the third iteration of this story.
Right.
There was a film in 1954 with James Mason and Judy Garland, and then in 1976 with Kris Kristofferson and Barbara Streisand. Streisand gave full blessing. She was kind of present when they filmed parts of this, and she saw dailies and some scene edits that they had put together and was like all about what Gaga was doing. They've made changes to the story. I think from my money, this is probably, because we've talked a lot, John, you and I specifically on this station about how like reboots and remakes are kind of tired and
right.
old, and please give us something new.
Mm-hmm.
This is a story that is kind of special because it can be told through every different, you know, generation of Hollywood or music as they retell it. And they've sort of honed it into this new version. I mean, the music that you're hearing here did not really exist at times in it did not exist at all in the 70s, and it certainly didn't in the 50s. So they've modernized it. And I think that they've done a very good job in, you know, taking someone who is already a superstar, Lady Gaga, but like giving her a chance to sort of tell her story in a way.
That's great.
There's a lot of personal elements to her performance. You can just tell. I mean, if you've ever read an interview about what it was like for her, she gets to show us a little bit of what that was like. But I don't want it to just be all about Gaga, okay? I mean, and she, in any of the press I've seen about this, is very big on this, too. Bradley Cooper's performance is one of the best I've seen this year as well.
Right.
He is not to be undervalued or underrated in this movie. I know that, you know, this movie was supposed to get made in like 2011 with Clint Eastwood directing, and like Beyonce was going to star in it. And that would have been an interesting film. But Cooper somehow, like, that ended up in development hell. And then when he swooped in and they got the funding and Gaga got on board, like, everything just sort of clicked. And I could see this movie getting a lot of nominations come Oscar time.
Well,
I really could. In the big categories,
it'll
too.
Be interesting to see if Cooper gets nominated in multiple categories. And Blake, before we go to a commercial break and we move on to the next movie, I do got to say, I've seen Lady Gaga. I've never seen American Horror Story, but I've seen a Lady Gaga documentary, which I did not like, actually, but I could tell she was a good actress in it because she really played for the camera in it. So, which is the reason I didn't like it as a documentary, but that's for another day to talk about. All right, Blake, so obviously a recommendation on A Star Is Born you give everyone. I don't know, Blake, do you do stars? Do you do thumbs up? Do you do ratings? What do you do?
I don't ever really have a rating system. Mm-hmm. What I try to do is just say, look, if you've been listening to me talk about this movie, I think it's pretty much implied that I loved it.
All right.
This is one of my favorite movies of the year. And if I'm going to push people toward quality cinema going experiences that otherwise they, you know, may not, or they're not, you know, they're not a big trailer watcher. Or they don't know, like, A Star Is Born is an incredible film. And you should go out and see it, definitely.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Then we're here about Venom with Blockbuster Blake here on 720 WGN. Lady Gaga's first big hit, Just Dance, bringing us into break. Blockbuster Blake just broke down the movie A Star Is Born. Got good reviews there. And let's turn gears. We don't have too much time to talk about Venom, Blake, but apparently we don't really need to have too much time.
Yeah, sadly we really don't. Venom stars Tom Hardy, and it's actually the comic book film based off the character Venom, which was, you know, a Spider-Man villain to many. It's always been a very big favorite character. It was featured once in Spider-Man 3, directed by Sam Raimi, way back when, and it didn't work then. And I hate to say it because I really wanted this to, but it didn't work for me now. The big thing is, though, that Tom Hardy, I will say, really does try in this movie. It made me laugh several times. And he fits the role, the character, the version of this Eddie Brock that they've created for this film iteration. The problem is, and I've talked about it a lot on WGN, is you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, right? We have all these big films and everything. This particular entry, however, falls under the Sony brand. It doesn't fall under the Disney big Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is an in association with Marvel production, so it's kind of off on its own tangent. And while they tried, the film, I felt, just did not have a declared tone. You know, it started off one way, and then it shifted into this like serious investigative journalist, you know, who is going to get, you know, this unhappy accident, turn him into this superhero, but not really a hero character. But then at the same time, it tried to be really funny, and then by the end of the movie, like the end of the movie, it declared what its tone was, and then I kind of wanted a whole movie of that, but the movie ended.
Wow.
So it doesn't really click with itself. Despite the fact that there's very talented people involved, I don't know. This movie, I mean, I do know, and this movie just didn't work for me.
Yeah.
So, and I know that a lot of people are saying that, too.
Yeah, so Venom.
I'm curious what a lot of the diehard comic fans think.
A lot of my friends, you know, that we have on Facebook and Twitter are diehard comic fans, and many people not happy with this movie. And I can't believe no one's using the Venom left me looking for the antidote. How about that?
Oh,
see?
I heard somebody call it Nenum.
Yes.
They're just kind of like, didn't really work for them.
All right. Well, so,
can I ask a question?
Oh, Roger. Yeah, sure. You're always welcome.
Because I'm a member of the Mary Marvel Marching Society from way back when.
Mm-hmm.
And so you said it was Sony that produced the Venom movie.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Doesn't Sony have like a horrible track record with Marvel movies?
So, yes and no. For the most part, yes. I would say no, because if we didn't have Spider-Man 1 and 2,
right,
which was under the Sony brand,
okay,
we wouldn't really have all the comic book films we have today.
That's true.
And, I'm not going to count the Nolan Batman films. They're in their own
world. Well, that's DC. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. But definitely, I mean, what Sam Raimi did with the first two Spider-Man films kind of set a new standard for how to make comic book films, you know, mm-hmm, in the early 2000s. But from there on, it's been a lot of hit and miss. And the problem is that, you know, when Marvel was, I guess it was, and maybe my history is a bit sketchy here, but I think it was near bankruptcy at one point, so certain properties were sold off to different,
exactly,
studios, right?
Exactly.
That's why Fantastic Four has had multiple iterations and, mm-hmm, it's never been done right, including but not limited to the no-one-should-have-ever-seen version that was made for Fox. Then you have Spider-Man, which, you know, getting Spider-Man into the Marvel Cinematic Universe was a big amount of doing.
Right.
I don't know how many meetings, but they finally made it work. And Venom is one of the properties they've held on to. So I think they had to make this movie. I don't know all the story, but I know that, you know, you only get so long to make a movie when you,
right,
have the rights to the property. And I think they had to make this movie. So, you know, getting a big star like Tom Hardy, Michelle Williams, who, by the way,
yeah,
is fantastic. And it just, it, so much of this movie I wanted to work, mm-hmm, and none of it really did.
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
And I think it's because there were probably reshoots. I think that they had a problem with deciding what tone it wanted to take, and then you just ended up getting what you got in the end.
Mm-hmm.
If there would have been some serious creative decisions and then commitments made to those decisions earlier, I think, you know, you would have had a great performance by Tom Hardy that wasn't mired in a mess of a film.
Yeah.
Because there's some really great Tom Hardy moments here. I was enjoying it, but I wasn't enjoying the overall experience.
Hey, Roger, what was the name of that society you were in?
It's the Mary Marvel Marching Society. You've never heard of that?
No, I'm learning so much about you,
this
though,
was,
Roger.
This was Stan Lee in the early days of the rebirth of Marvel Comics back in the 60s. Did a ton of promotions, and one of them was the Mary Marvel Marching Society, and in the comics, you could cut out the little application tag and fill it out and mail it in, and you got a membership card and some other things, and a certificate, I think. And he always ran contests, but like you, where you were running your contest with finish the headlines, but you didn't have a prize.
Right.
Yeah. So Stan Lee popularized that with running contests, or, you know, running like a question in the magazine, and you got the prize was the really big no prize.
Okay.
You know, really big no prize.
Uh-huh.
And that was the joy of reading those comics. It wasn't just the story and the artwork, which was absolutely mind-blowing when you were raised on DC at that time, but was the letters to the editor, the comments from Stan Lee, and just some great stuff in those. So
really cool.
That, I grew up with those. So.
Interesting. All right, Blake, you're going to hang on the line. We're going to talk Halloween movies in a bit, okay?
Absolutely.
All right, more with Blockbuster Blake in a second, but it is now 2:34. And Roger, this wasn't my fault either. Now, this is...
It's my fault.
I know.
Two in a row.
Just make sure the bosses know that.
I'm letting them know.
2:34, it's news time. Here's Roger Mattis. 720 WGN, John Hanson in for Matt Bubala on this Saturday morning. And we're talking about movies with Blockbuster Blake. And Blake, it is the season to get a little scared. And man, I'm not much for the jump out slasher films. I know a lot of people love them, especially around Halloween time. So I'd love to get the conversation started about the movies that you all love to watch. It's a guilty pleasure, maybe, or the movie that you just like to that you just like to be scared by or creeped out by. It's a fun feeling to go through. Obviously, it's great in the movie theaters, but maybe at home or whatever. So, Blake Stubbs, why don't you get this conversation started? Oh, by the way, 312-981-7200, text or talk. We want to hear from you guys. Blake, you got any classic favorites that give you the heebie-jeebies?
Oh, do I have classic favorites? Come on, John. Of course. For me, a big one that I have to watch every year at this time of year is The Exorcist. I love that film. It's an amazing cinematic experience. Sadly, it's one of the few, you know, classics I haven't seen on a big screen. But I do watch it every year. I do think that it is both scary at times, but also I think it's a great story. I think it's just one of those films that they just got it right when they made it. And it's interesting to, you know, for all the years that I watched it, I find that there's always somebody I know who hasn't seen it. And I love showing it to them and getting their reaction because the movie still plays. You know, it still plays.
Yeah, that movie, I didn't see it until I was, I think, an adult. Came out in the 70s, obviously. But, man, that movie, it holds up in scariness. You know how you look back at some movies and they just, you know, you're like, how are people scared of this? And that movie is not one of those. Those are ones that you could show anyone at any time, and it scares the crap out of you.
It does, and it's it doesn't matter. It's just like a, it has aged so well because one, the filmmaking was just outstanding, directed by, you know, William Friedkin, and it was nominated for, you know, multiple. The Academy did acknowledge this film, but the big thing for me though too is that the visuals and the effects and everything was very practical,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, the way they captured it, like, you know, the spider walk down the stairs, the rotating head, the vomiting of the pea soup, okay? Like, to just describe them to you, right? There's not much to it. But to watch the film, it hits you. And if you've done that, the movie's going to scare generations. And this movie does. It still does.
If I may interject,
yeah.
Gentlemen. So I was in my prime high school, college days when this happened. And I'll tell you this. I read the book first. About a year and a half or so before the movie came out, I read William Peter Blatty wrote the book, and I believe wrote the screenplay.
He did. He won the Oscar for it, too.
Yes. The book, I could not put it down. It was riveting. I think I read that book faster than I've ever read a book in my life. The problem was, when the movie came out, and having been a radio TV major at the time and knowing about filmmaking and stuff like that, while everybody else in the theater was jumping out of their seats and squeamishly screaming and everything, I'm sitting over in the corner with my box of popcorn laughing my freaking head off because I knew how all the effects were being done. And I thought it was hilarious. Compared to the book, it didn't, for me, it was ruined. The book ruined it.
Hmm. Hey, Blake.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't mean to interrupt this love affair between you two, but we do have a caller from Bill in Des Plaines. Bill, you got a comment? Did I just hang up on Blake, Jess? I think I did. Well, Bill, go ahead and give your...
Here.
Bill, you go ahead, and we'll fill Blake in exactly on what you're going to talk about.
Okay, I just wanted to say maybe he's aware of it, but the scary movies, they often have a different, like a clip at the beginning, I don't know, 5-10 minutes long or something, that's not necessarily related to the movie. And like there's Dr. Phil and Shaquille O'Neal at the beginning of one of them, that from one of the Saw movies. But anyway, I don't know which one of them it is, the second or the third, I think. But it's got James Woods as a star, and it's a parody of The Exorcist, and it is hilarious.
So it plays in front of a different movie?
In front of one of the scary movies. I think it's two or three, but I don't know. You'd have to look at any one of them that's got James Woods in it. That's the one. But it's also got the sidekick. I can't think of his name from Conan O'Brien.
Andy Richter. Andy Richter.
That's it. Yeah, he's also in it as a priest. And I don't know, there's not a lot of stuff, but if you like The Exorcist, I mean, this is worth seeing.
All right, well, I'm going to...
Bill, it's sort of like if you like The Lord of the Rings, you got to read Lord of the Rings, too, just for the heck of it, even though it's 98 pages, but whatever.
All right, well, I got Blake on the line. Blake, have you heard of a Exorcist parody Bill was just calling about? It ran before one of the scary movies. Have you seen it?
Yes, I did see it. And it is Andy Richter, isn't it? And Andy Richter, I love Andy Richter.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
Right.
It was in Scary Movie 2, I believe. And it definitely, they go over everything that, you know, makes The Exorcist work. They just go overboard to excess. It's funny. Yeah. I gotta give some credit to it. I mean, I vividly remember it. So right. There you go.
Okay, so you guys went with Exorcist, which is I'd say that's it's not the pop out slasher film. Of course, it's well more executed than that. I'm gonna go in the direction the movie that I like to watch when I really want to be creeped out. And this is just me. I don't like the slashers or anything like that. I don't like pop. I watch movies, scary movies, with my hands over my eyes still. I cannot watch them. I don't like the pop out. But my favorite is Silence of the Lambs. Any serial murderer movie is right up my alley. And there is enough of that pop out, especially at the end of Silence of the Lambs, that, that gives that such a suspense to it. But just that psychological, slow moving thriller, that is my kind of, exploring that sort of genre. Blake, I don't know. I mean, Silence of the Lambs obviously holds up. It's just an incredible film, won the big five categories for Oscar, of course. But man, that movie is just so well put together.
It really is. It is a masterclass, I think, in what I would call horror thriller or horror suspense filmmaking. And I'm not the only person to call it that, but that's really what it is. I mean, like you said, it's not a slasher. It's not going for cheap scares.
It's not a Halloween theme movie by any stretch of the imagination. But
no.
it in October on a dark night, that's what I would watch.
And I think that this was a movie that the acting alone, the script is very well put together, but the acting is what has always drawn people in. I mean, Anthony Hopkins is Hannibal Lecter alone, but Jodie Foster, Ted Levine, by the way, the actor who plays Buffalo Bill in that film, pretty much, and I remember reading an interview with him about this, like, it was a great performance, but it hurt his career.
Oh, for sure.
Because he was so convincingly scary. And he had sort of done such a good job that it caused harm to a person who wanted to be a working actor and work and act in all kinds of different things. It was very hard for him to find work after this. And so, that alone, the performance of the villain, one of the villains, is so good that it kind of tainted his career for a little while there. Definitely a movie that if you have not seen it, you need to watch it, and there is no better time than to watch it at this time of year.
I would
agree with you, John.
The editing of the end of that movie, and which I know that originally they weren't going to edit it that way, where there's the reveal. I don't want to do spoiler alert, but it came out in 1991, so people go out and see it. But the fact that Jodie Foster, her character, Agent Starling, was not where we all thought she was, is one of the most dramatic and well-put-together pieces of editing that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I was going to say there's, I'm sure there have been, video essays. I don't know if people know that this is a thing, but if you go on YouTube, when there's a great scene, whether it be due to screenplay or editing or cinematography, there's a lot of great video essays out there. And if there isn't one on the final sequence of Silence of the Lambs, somebody out there is going to listen to this and they're going to make one. Because you're absolutely correct. It is truly a great suspense sequence
that
has you on the edge of your seat.
When that door opens, and you think, and then they do the slow zoom of the character, I forget his name, her boss, realizing that they're in the wrong place and where she is going to be harmful. And then the editing, that edit between the two houses is incredible. But then the editing the keeps up. The storytelling through the labyrinth of Buffalo Bill's house, how the upstairs transitions to the downstairs, and then obviously the in the dark, and then the green light of the infrared or the night vision goggles. I'll watch that movie by myself. Until the last scene. Until Buffalo Bill opens that door, if I'm alone, I will turn the movie off. I cannot watch.
What?
I can't watch it. I can't watch the end of that movie. Alone.
You've watched the whole movie.
Many, many times. I've seen it.
Well, I know, but you've been with other people.
Yes.
Okay.
I can't watch that alone. I really can't, especially when the gun is drawn and we see it through the night. And apologies, spoilers, go see Silence of the Lambs. But then when the gun is drawn, and it's facing her head, it is just so well conceived and storyboarded and executed to perfection. It's so incredible. It's a really great payoff on for a movie that kind of trudges along slowly and it ramps up with momentum. Man, you get a good bang at the end, and that really just kind of sells the whole thing for me.
Yeah, I sometimes, you know, I developed this idea in college, imagine that. But I always try to describe some films as different types of, taking different types of drinks. You know, some they have to be quick shots, right? But some you got to savor. Silence of the Lambs is one that you got to savor. You really have to enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a nice whiskey, but then it has a really, it's like with a shot of tequila right at the end of it. You know, like that's what like you swirl the glass around, you got the ice, you like the clink of the ice, maybe one ice cube and a nice Maker's, take a couple sips of a Knob Creek, and then bam, here comes some Cuervo down your throat. I don't know. That's what that movie feels like to me.
No, it definitely is. And I think that that's one of those, and that's another movie that, you know, I mean, if we're just going to sit here and name some classics, that's fine with me, but this one holds up still as well.
Yeah.
And it definitely, that unveiling, the thing that you're talking about, and people who have seen it, they know. But people who haven't are like, wait, what are
you if you have not seen it, you have to go see it. Hey, Blake, we got to take a quick commercial break. 312-981-7200. I want to hear from all you out there. What's that one movie, man, you just love to watch to get scared or make your skin crawl on 720 WGN? It's October, which means it's time for Monster Mash and scary movies, and we're chatting with Blockbuster Blake. And Blake, you know that means it's Halloween time when you hear that song. And we're talking about thrillers. And Roger actually has a little quiz for you, Blake, if you're okay with that.
I'm okay, as long as everyone's okay with me probably getting it all wrong.
Go ahead, Roger. What do you got for us?
Well, Blake, this is a theme song to a movie that I saw in the theater, and I actually, when I was in charge of films for our housing area at SIU Carbondale, I made a point around Halloween time to show this in the cafeteria. So imagine a huge screen at one end of this large cafeteria and about maybe 300 students who at one point in the movie jump about 5 feet out of their chairs simultaneously and then fall back down. That's the one scary spot in this psychological thriller. And let's see if you can tell what it is by this theme song. It does sound spooky.
It does.
It's a psychological thriller.
Yeah.
So there was one movie. Okay. There was a movie I was going to bring up, and I don't. I'm probably wrong.
Okay.
But for me, it's between two films. Because I'm sketchy on the scores for the films, and I'm probably wrong. But for me, it's either The Omen or something like Rosemary's Baby.
Ooh. Close.
Because they're not horror movies.
Exactly.
They're psychological thrillers.
Right.
Trust me, I'm probably wrong. So
well, I've got a text. I got a text, Roger.
Oh.
I don't know if this is an answer to this thing. Was it Wait Until Dark?
Bingo.
Ah, the text from the 312.
Oh.
Bingo.
Wait Until Dark.
And that theme song was written and composed by Henry Mancini.
Mancini, yeah.
And this is a classic one-point scare-your-pants-off type of movie. In other words, it's not all blood and guts.
Wait, is this the Audrey Hepburn movie?
Yes.
Ah.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. This, I saw this, and I jumped when I saw it in the theater, because I had no clue what to expect. I thought it was kind of like a murder mystery, kind of detective kind of thing. And when this one scene, which I'm not giving away.
Spoiler alert, 1967.
I am not kidding. I showed this to about 300 students who had no clue what this movie was. And they were all watching it, and it had big names in it. And it got to that one point, I'm not kidding. I'm sitting in the back by the projector, laughing and giggling like a little boy when they all jumped. I'm not kidding. So if anyone has not seen this movie, you need to see it and uninterrupted. No pausing it to go get food or answer the phone or anything. You have to sit, get comfortable, turn the lights down low, and watch this.
And just to make sure you don't jump off the floor, make sure you grab your ankles.
Yeah, that too.
I will also throw in, because, and this is why I think I definitely know the story and I know it very well. I just didn't know the scene, because my first introduction to this is actually the stage play of the same name.
This
is a film that translates very well to the stage, and you can get the same reaction out of a live audience if they don't know what's going to happen.
Exactly. Oh, so, it's perfect for the stage.
Gasp when they see it live.
Yeah.
As opposed to like a jumping scream or whatever. But I mean, I've seen an audience. I've seen a couple people do that. So Roger, you brought a gem to this.
Well,
because it's not the type of movie that everybody's going to pick in October.
Right.
Because they think Halloween. Mm-hmm. But this is a true psychological thriller that has both adapted itself to the stage very well.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, Henry Mancini, I mean, come on, I should have known that. I'm going to
Well, it's a little out of his, you know, he's known for more light comedic type themes and to movies.
Correct.
And this was completely out of anyone's realm of understanding of what he was capable of.
Not only that, Hepburn got nominated for an Academy Award for this film.
Really?
As well.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I did not know that.
I'm curious if in the annals of Hollywood history, if Mancini's involvement of this film didn't stem from her working with him on Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh, right.
Ooh.
Maybe.
Because he wrote Moon River for her on that film. And
wow.
So I think they were friends. And I wouldn't be surprised if this was a, you know, get out of your comfort zone and come try something new. Because that happens. Come on.
Sure.
We all know that. We all know some story where, you know, people kind of in Hollywood have sort of worked on something because of someone they know. Otherwise, how would anything ever get done?
Yeah.
And, but I mean, look, this is a movie people shouldn't miss. Audrey Hepburn, Alan Arkin, Richard Crenna, Jack Weston. This is a huge cast. I mean, it's not a big cast in terms of numbers, but like big names, you know, definitely.
Hey, not to keep on interrupting the Roger Blake Love Fest, but we're going to do that because it is 3 o'clock. But Blake, we normally slot you for the hour. You don't mind sticking around a little bit longer, though, do you?
I'm all yours.
312-981-7200. Want you to join the conversation if you've got a scary movie, a favorite one, whether it's a slasher, a psychological thriller, or just something weird and quirky. 312-981-7200. It's, you know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. It's dark outside. It's spooky out in Chicago with the clouds and the rain. It's really set up for us to talk about some scary movies. Speaking of scary, you heard the laugh right there. The stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Got to read this first, too. Hear the sounds that matter. The top five at five from the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantes. Weekday afternoons on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is 3 o'clock, 301. Here's Roger Bannon. Obviously a Christmas movie, but referencing Halloween Town, The Nightmare Before Christmas. That's an incredible film. And joining us here on the line is Blockbuster Blake. Oh, Blake, I love The Nightmare Before Christmas, but a good Halloween flick, too, as it turns out. We're talking about movies that scare you, that freak you out, psychological thrillers, just movies that you love to watch on a dark and stormy night, as tonight is as well. Blake, we've talked about Wait Until Dark. We've talked about Silence of the Lambs, The Exorcist. You mind if we take a few phone calls, Blake?
Absolutely.
312-981-7200. Talk or text if you've got something. Let's go to Kelly. Kelly, you're on the line here on 720 WGN.
Hello.
Kelly, what's your movie that just makes your skin crawl?
Well, I'm not a big horror film buff, but there's a movie called Bone Tomahawk.
Bone Tomahawk.
Starring Kurt Russell. And it's a Western, but it's a suspense thriller, gory kind of movie.
And it's something.
And it creeps me out, yeah.
Blake, have you seen Bone Tomahawk?
I'm very familiar with Bone Tomahawk. This was a movie that came out around the time The Hateful Eight did. It was like right before Kurt Russell shaved that massive cookie duster that he had, or soup catcher, I guess, as well. But he plays this aging sheriff who gets recruited to go find this woman who's been abducted, but she's been abducted by cannibals. or something that, you know, people from the Old West have never encountered.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a group of guys that are heading out with him, and it's a pretty big cast. I mean, it's Patrick Wilson, Matthew Fox, Richard Jenkins. I mean, David Arquette is in this movie, Sid Haig, like, it's got a nice cast. It was a more on the independent film side, but it's, but the grit, you know, that gore that we're talking about, it's present. It's got some suspense. It's got some scary action, and I say scary action because it's very violent in the fighting that goes on in the film. And it's a Western that if people have seen it, they will have to talk about it. If they haven't seen it, they're like, wait, what is this?
And I never
show someone a trailer, I had to be intrigued.
I had to Google it. I didn't know it. Kelly, where are you calling from this evening or morning?
Chillicothe, Ohio. I'm on my way home from work, so you're keeping me awake.
Oh, that's we great. Appreciate that, Kelly. Enjoy right. Chillicothe, Ohio, and thanks for the phone call, okay?
All right, thank you.
720 WGN. Give us a phone call at 312-981-7200 if you'd like to join the conversation about scary movies. Blake, we got a couple texters coming in.
Okay.
Squat texts in. He wants to know, I assume Squat would be a man. I don't know, perhaps, probably. Would Blowout be considered a psychological thriller or good for Halloween?
You know, I'm going to say that we can classify that one as a thriller, but we should also classify it as one of my absolute favorite films.
Really?
That is a good pull. Thank you. Yes.
Is that John Travolta?
John Travolta. It's directed by Brian De Palma. And I think it's probably, I mean, Brian De Palma's made some really good movies, okay? He's also made some movies that people didn't really love, but I think this one is probably my favorite De Palma movie because it's about a guy who's a sound editor. He's a sound editor for the adult film industry.
Oh, okay. Fun job.
And it's John Travolta, played by John Travolta. And one night he's out, he's capturing Foley sound, and Foley sound is going out and actually capturing natural sound or manufacturing the sound and making sure you can put it into the movie. But he's just out capturing natural sound, and, you know, he's just taking a walk, right? All of a sudden there's a car crash, and someone almost dies in that car crash, and he helps her. But then there's way more to this than meets the eye, but also the ears. And so the movie Blowout is the type of movie that if you've met somebody who's seen it, they're going to be probably talking about it with as much emphasis as I am about how cool the movie is and how well it's put together. It's a movie that embraces brilliant filmmaking, in my opinion, because of the use of sound, because of the suspense and the thrill. John Lithgow's in this movie. Nancy Allen is in this movie. God, I know what I'm watching tomorrow or on Sunday night when I get back from St. Louis, because I'm going to the Hawks game tomorrow. But when I get back Sunday night, I know what I'm watching. Thank you for that text message. Blowout. Definite must.
Just Squad also wants to know, do you think that Play Misty for Me holds up today?
Play Misty for Me? Yeah, I mean, I'm one who, I think I saw that movie when I was in college,
yeah.
and I enjoyed it. I haven't seen it since, but it's one that I'm sure if I watched it again now and it was more fresh in my mind, I would probably argue that it does hold up pretty well. Although, you know, when you watch these movies that were made in the 60s and the 70s that are really good, you know, for instance, or enjoyable, there's always something in there that you're like, ooh, that doesn't hold up right now.
Right.
That doesn't hold up right now. And you can pick it apart based on that, but I would say that, yeah, Play Misty for Me is that's a good pick, too. Yeah.
We got a text.
I figured we'd just be getting a bunch of hocus pocus. And like,
No, you know our listeners. No.
You know what really makes that movie? No.
What's that?
Great.
Is Roberta Flack.
Yes.
First time ever I saw your face was a huge part of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
We got another text. The movie Squirm. Blake, do you know?
I've never seen it.
Never seen it. Okay, that's like one of the first times.
I've never seen it.
I'm looking it up right now. It looks like a 1976 horror slash natural horror film, which I don't know what that means. Not a great IMDb rating. Directed by Jeff Lieberman. I don't know if that rings a bell. Music by Robert Prince. Don Scardino is in it. I don't know if that... It's about a city slicker making his way to the swampy little town of Fly Creek, Georgia, to see his girlfriend, played by Patricia Percy. After meeting up with her, he learns the area has recently been ravaged by intense storms. More troubling is the appearance of large worms driven up through the soil by the downpours. But Mick and the locals don't realize that that the electricity from down power lines has caused the worms to go mad and develop a taste for human flesh. Not a kind of movie I think I would enjoy. It's not up my alley, but some people love those flicks, Blake.
I'm going to say challenge accepted on this one. This is my homework. Somebody was going to bring something up I've never heard of, and I've never heard of this, but she got me hooked. Looking at these pictures from production, yeah, I'm in. Sign me up.
By the way, go watch this. You mentioned it in 319 text in Michael out in Iowa. Thanks for listening, Michael. Not into scary movies. It's kind of like myself. One movie I watch every Halloween, Hocus Pocus, of course.
Hocus Pocus.
Gotta watch Hocus Pocus. It's so good.
It is so good, and it's you know, I was the core demographic for that movie. I was a kid when it came out. I was totally into it. It was very Halloween. It was very fun. I still love it. I could watch it, you know, every year at least once. Apparently, the station Freeform is playing it a lot this month, so plenty of chances. Of course, you know, movie nerds like myself, I own a copy, but I'm not letting anyone borrow it.
Right.
But Hocus Pocus is a definite must. And I honestly, like, I didn't mean to infer that the listeners aren't going to bring out the big guns and bring out the good stuff. It's just, you know, around this time of year, there's the big ones. There's Nightmare Before Christmas, which we've already mentioned. Something like The Shining, which is a great movie, and definitely scares people.
Hey, we got a question from the 708. The color remake of the original Psycho, they wanted to know if you've seen it. Skycap Dan wanted to know.
I have seen it. Stars Vince Vaughn, Anne Heche is in it. I believe Julianne Moore as well. I might be wrong on that. But I got to be honest with you. I don't really remember enjoying it all that much, but that's just because I'm a Hitchcock faithful. I think it was a shot-for-shot remake done at a time when they were trying to tell these stories again. Before the run of remakes, you know, this topic that we've talked about before, I think Vince Vaughn gives a good performance in it.
Yeah.
I think that there's good elements in it. I just think that the overall movie, I mean, it's a Gus Van Sant film. I had to look up who directed it. And it's not typical Gus Van Sant, but there's definitely hints of Van Zandt in it when you watch it.
Yeah.
So it's a more commercial Van Zandt film. I don't know. I just wasn't... It didn't click for me. Easiest way to say it.
We had a caller didn't want to come on air, but wanted your thoughts on Last House on the Left.
Which version?
Oh, well, I don't know. The caller's already gone, Blake. So I know there's been a couple of them.
I'm a fan of the 72 version. I'm not the biggest fan of the latest version, which I looked it up, 2009. The latest version has a pretty crazy violent end to it, much like, you know, the other film, which is, I feel like the original film played more to the psychological thriller elements than the modern one did. The modern one got a little too... Trying to please with big antics, whereas the charm for me, the cult following that I have, that I joined in with on The Last House on the Left from 72, I enjoyed more.
All right.
So, I mean, if we're talking about both, you know, I got to delineate between the two.
773 chimes in on the text line. Have you ever seen the sci-fi thriller The Power with George Hamilton? That's from the 773, the sci-fi thriller The Power.
No. I have not.
All right.
The Power?
Yeah, you're going to have some.
George Hamilton?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm making notes, everybody. Squirm and The Power. All right.
What about
the Power of Squirm?
The Power and Squirm. If someone found that list and it was not titled with what you're going to do, I don't know if you'd probably get a call from someone else. Okay, 630 chimes in Evil Dead 2, Original Dawn of the Dead, course. High Tension, yeah. Wolf Creek 1 and 2. That's Chris and Elk Grove.
I enjoy all Wolf Creek 1. I've never seen Wolf Creek 2. High Tension, I thought, was great. I thought that the overall, like, if I had read the screenplay, I would have loved it. I thought the execution of the twist at the end could have been played a little bit better, but the overall movie, I really enjoyed. And Evil Dead 2, please. That movie's so brilliant. It's not even funny. That is one of my favorite movies. And I do watch the Evil Dead films around this time of year. Army of Darkness, which is the third film in that series, is the movie a lot of people easily relate to. But Evil Dead 2, oh man. If you want to see what independent spirit behind filmmaking is and just making it your own way, watch Sam Raimi's Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
That is a great, great entry.
Hey, we got another phone call for you. Adam out in Rockford, you got a question for Blockbuster Blake about a scary movie or a movie to see if he's seen it?
Yeah, and I actually had I'm sitting here on the line. God, there are so many, but I'll just rattle off a couple. There's a movie called Pi, where it's like the mathematical symbol for Pi. More of a suspense thriller type movie about a guy who's like a brilliant mathematician, and you know, it's obviously going through some, you know, I don't know, some bad stuff mentally all of the time, and kind of encounters all these people that are trying to get to whatever secret he seems to be prying at, and in the end he ends up taking the drill to his head. But
spoiler alert.
I'm sorry, I didn't drop that. And very quickly, also, just in the same vein, I guess, a little bit, The Machinist, I think, as a movie, Christian Bale movie, very, very good movie for what it's trying to be. And I just wanted to throw it out there really, really quickly. The scariest zombie movie, or like the scariest idea of a zombie movie to me was always, what if zombies could move, you know, at the speeds that humans can move at. And when I saw 28 weeks later, or is it 28 days later, 28 weeks later, and you see the zombies in that movie running around, and I mean, that is the kind of stuff that keeps me up at night.
Ooh.
But thanks for having me on, Beth.
Well, I'm glad it keeps you up at night, because you can call in from Rockford, Adam. We appreciate the phone call. Blake, your thoughts on some of the films Adam listed off?
I'm a fan of all three. Well, four, technically, because he mentioned the 28, both films from the 28 days, 28 weeks. Pi, oddly enough, little piece of trivia, it was Darren Aronofsky's first big film. It was the film that put him on the map. He's gone on to make The Wrestler. Most recently, Mother was the movie that came out for him. But it was also shot by Matthew Libatique, the guy I mentioned earlier, who shot both of the films that I reviewed earlier in this broadcast. The Machinist, Christian Bale, what a performance. What's crazy is that as soon as he finished making that movie, he put on all the weight to play Bruce Wayne in Batman Begins. So he read up on the weight loss and then the weight gain after. It's incredible what he did for those two roles. And the performance in The Machinist is excellent. I mean, it is a thriller because of what it does to your senses as a viewer, in a big way.
All right, Blake.
Big fan of all his picks.
We're going to take a quick commercial break, but the text line is lighting up. I got some more for you after the break. 312-981-7200. If you want to join the conversation on that one movie that's just really scares you, that maybe some other people haven't heard of, that they can add to their Halloween list. More coming up on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. John Hanson with Blake Stubbs on the line, and I can hear him furiously typing away as we look. Yeah, clickety clack as we're looking up some movies. We've got some great texts, and we really appreciate it. We're talking about the scary and creepy movies out there that really make your skin crawl. Let's go to one or two more texts, and I got a phone call as well. What do you think about Babadook? We got a text from the 219.
Babadook is one of those movies that I remember when it came out, I was like, this? And then, of course, people started seeing it, and they're like, Babadook. Like, it had a little phenomenon when it came out. And I think it's in that, you know, modern, and when I say modern, I mean like last 10 years, must-see lists. And it's one of those things where, like, I know people who don't like it, and I know people who do, but it built a very big following. It's one of those modern, like, really recent modern, like, cult classics, I think.
So that one's, I
can see why people would want to watch it around this time of year.
Someone texted in with the 1962 thriller Experiment in Terror, which I've never heard of. I don't know if you've heard of that movie, Blake. Ross Martin and
not.
Lee Remick. I mean, you're getting a lot of homework
Lee
here.
Said it. Okay.
And Glenn Ford. I don't know if that rings a bell, but the movie poster looks really cool from what I found
it
by Google.
It does look really cool.
So Experiment in Terror, you'll have to add that to the list, okay?
Adding it to the list.
All right. Yeah. We got a thriller with Donald Sutherland. This comes from Mike in Ravenswood on the Northwest Side. Eye of the Needle. Have you heard of Eye of the Needle?
I've never seen Eye of the Needle. No.
Okay.
No, I've heard the title, but I've never seen the film. I adding it to the list.
And Donald Sutherland's great.
This is the best thing for me is just come on WGN, talk about things I love, and then people throw things at me that they love that I've never seen. And then I have a new list of homework that I get to go and watch and enjoy. So it's the best. Best trade-off, right?
It's really a love fest. Okay, we're going to go to a phone call here, and we've got Lulu. You're on 720 WGN. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, hi. Listen, I want to throw three out there.
Okay.
I don't believe they've been mentioned, and I can never say it right, Amityville Horror.
Yeah, Amityville Horror,
which is supposedly
based on the true story, but that's been somewhat debunked. You said you had a couple others that you wanted to throw out there, too,
yes,
Lulu.
Carrie, the original Carrie. And then... There was a Stephen King, and I don't believe it was a movie. I think it was made for television, like a two-night series or something, called Needful Things. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am. Yeah, Needful Things is one of those movies that has some serious violence in it that I remember shocked me as a kid. Needful Things is very interesting. Basically, the devil comes to town. And he is willing to offer up what people want, but there are costs.
Does he come into town like Harold Hill? Like, what do you mean the devil comes to town? He just comes in on a train, or?
Well, it's implied that there's more to this man than meets the eye. There's evil dealings going on, quite nefarious.
I think he's a new shopkeeper in town.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I think that's how he comes to town.
Well, maybe he's just trying to run an honest-to-God business in town, and,
I don't think so. But thank you.
Hey, Lulu, we appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for joining us here on WGN. I like that she had a couple classics too, which we've been really good, kind of off the beaten path. We don't have to dive into Carrie or Amityville, but they're great thrillers, of course. You know what, Blake? I wanted to mention one. I can't think of the name of it now. Of course, it is. This movie freaked me out as a young adult, I guess you could say, or a teenager. It's got Denzel in it, I believe. So is it Fallen, where the spirit travels between the people? And I think I watched it recently, and it didn't quite scare me as much as it did. But when I was a teenager, man, singing that time is on my side, and that's a really well put. I thought at least when I was younger, that movie scared me like none other.
I was going to say, it's interesting to watch movies when you're younger. You know, for instance, Carrie is also a film that scared me to no end. And it wasn't really the movie. It was the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I remember having nightmares about the end of that movie. And now I watch it and I'm like, man, what a really well put together movie.
Right.
It doesn't scare me anymore.
Right.
You know, I just like it doesn't. I know what's going to happen. I got over whatever it was that, you know, the nightmares, that's not an issue anymore. But also directed by Brian De Palma, and it was written by Stephen King based off of a novella he wrote, I believe.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I was going to say,
those are all good picks.
Yeah. So I was going to say the last one I have for you, I think it's going to be homework before we got a break and go to news.
All right.
I don't know. Maybe you've seen it. This is from the early 60s. Texter from the 224 chimes in with Premature Burial with Ray Milland, scariest ever, says the 224. So,
scariest ever? Well, it's going on the list. I'm sorry I have not seen this, but I'm intrigued. It's a Corman movie. I'm in.
All right.
I'm in. Roger Corman directed it. I'm all in.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, Blake, we've given you some homework. You've given a lot of us some homework, too. Thanks for spending 90 minutes with us here on WGN, Blake.
Well, you know, you get John and Blake together, you throw in a little Roger Baddish, it's bound to happen.
It certainly is. All right, Blake, take care. And hey, obviously the Hawks are on later tonight on WGN, and you'll be there in St. Louis.
I will be there causing trouble, and I guess they call themselves the River City. I'm from Peoria, also the River City, but get ready. Trouble's coming to the River City. I'll be there.
Go
cheering on the Hawks.
Go Hawks, man. All right, Blake, take it easy, man.
Thank you, everybody.
Quick commercial break, then news on 720 WGN. Okay, hyper-local news is something really hard to come by. It takes a lot of reporters to do, and obviously it's not the most not the cheapest thing in the world. But we're going to be talking with the folks, one of the editors from Block Club Chicago, in just a little bit. You may not have heard of Block Club Chicago. It's relatively new, but you probably heard of DNA Info. We have a great partnership with DNA Info before they shut down here at WGN Radio. And they've kind of risen out of the ashes of DNA Info. So we're going to have information about Block Club Chicago, their great stories, a few examples of some really cool stories in the news right now, and then how you can get involved in their mission of giving Chicagoans a great source for local news. Another great source for local and national news is one Roger Banish. It's 3:33, and we send it over to him with a look at our news. 720 WGN, John Hanson in for Matt Bubala early on this Saturday morning. Local news as important as ever, but it's harder and harder sometimes to seemingly find the stories that you want to read about. DNA Info was a great local news site. It shut down last November, but out of its ashes comes Block Club Chicago. And joining us here to talk about some of their stories and what makes local news hard to tell and not easy to keep going as a business is Jen Sabella. Jen, one of the editors, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
Oh, anytime. So tell us a little bit, in case people don't know, what Block Club Chicago is, if they've never heard of it. Talk us through what you guys are doing there.
We are the team from DNA Info Chicago, some of the team from DNA Info Chicago. And when it shut down last November, a group of us got together to create a nonprofit newsroom called Block Club Chicago. So we're doing a lot of the same hyper-local coverage that DNA Info did. Our reporters are embedded in neighborhoods. And they report, you know, day to day on everything going on in those neighborhoods. We're a little bit smaller than DNA because we just are starting out and we are member supported. So we're looking for people to subscribe and donate and, you know, help us support this journalism that we think is really important, local journalism. So that's us. And it's been a blast and really exciting to see how the city's responded to us so far.
Has it been difficult to convince people that they should pay for good journalism?
Honestly, it's not. Like, we've had a few emails being like, oh, I didn't realize I had to pay for this. And we are just very honest. We say, you know, this is what happened with DNA Info. It was a really sad day. And, you know, it costs money to have reporters in the work that we do. It costs money. You have to pay journalists. And they, especially our journalists, work so hard. Our reporters are working like, I have to sometimes beg them to stop working. So, you know, it's just, like anything else, if you're getting value out of something, I don't think that a few cents a day is too much to ask for that. We do have some options for people who can't afford it. We are rolling out a sponsored membership really soon where somebody with more money can sponsor someone else who can't afford a subscription. So stay tuned for that as well.
So before we make the pitch again for why people should sign up, let's go through a couple of your interesting stories that you've had lately, because you guys run the gamut. Obviously, you're going to be covering the top news of the day, especially big news, and we've had a lot of it the last few days. There'll be some crime reporting. You can't tell the story of Chicago without telling some of the stories. But of course, you guys tell, I don't know, the quirky, offbeat things that I don't want to say that no one else would ever cover, but you guys are certainly covering it first because you've got the boots on the ground, right?
Exactly. A lot of our stories come from reporters just walking by a storefront and seeing a permit, or just, you know, they'll get a tip from somebody in the neighborhood. They'll walk down the street, and these people know that our reporters are on the case. So, for example, this week we had a shop that opened in Albany Park. And it's extremely brightly colored inside, and it's hard to miss.
Yeah,
something that you'd be like,
I need to stop and see what that is. I see the photo here of the woman that runs this. You're talking about Bon Vivant, if I'm correct, right? Am I saying that right? Am I even close?
Yes, Bon Vivant. And Emily Najad actually started this cake baking business a few years ago and became wildly popular. She actually made a cake for Chance the Rapper's daughter for her birthday party.
Oh, wow.
And has just done all these beautiful custom cakes. If you go follow that Bon Vivant on Instagram, you'll be blown away by her work. And she opened the studio kind of, you know, quietly in Albany Park, and she's going to be hosting classes, like donut decorating and how to make macarons, and just, you know, wants to bring people in who are interested in baking and interested in, like, getting creative with baking. And, Patty Wetley, our former reporter for Lincoln Square. She's doing some freelancing for us. And she went and talked to Emily about her journey, like from she didn't really know what she was going to do with her life. And she realized, hey, I'm actually pretty good at this baking thing. And it's just become a huge success.
She obviously has high goals for what she wants to do. But there's one that I don't know if it's unattainable, but maybe we can get some retweets to make it happen. She wants to do a cake for Beyonce, right? Or has she done one already?
Yes.
That's her goal.
Chrissy Teigen. Chrissy Teigen is like her first goal, and Beyonce is like her dream that she could make a cake for Beyonce.
I would eat cake with Beyonce. I'm just going to say that.
Oh, same.
I mean, I'd eat cake with anyone. I'll do anything. I'll do anything you want with Beyonce, whatever she wants to do. I swear I'd never go skydiving, but if she wanted to do it, I would hold her hand the whole way down. What I like, and I like that one of the sub headlines that Patty uses is the sugar hustle. And that's what I love about the stories that you guys cover, whether it's this story or others. You really do give a sense for what it's like, especially for small business owners who are dreamers and just trying to make it work in our communities.
Exactly. And, you know, we don't often chase the stories that other media chases in terms of, you know, the trendy restaurant of the day. We like to tell the stories of the smaller places, the mom and pop places, and people who've been around for a while in the neighborhoods.
Yeah. All right. Let's shift gears a little bit, but we're going to keep it in a sweet story. Not only what is being given away, but just a really nice story. The headline comes from Kelly Bauer that moms in prison will get to celebrate Halloween with their kids after Chicagoans donate candy. Walk us through this one, Jen.
So there's a great group. It's called Moms Against Violence and Incarceration, and they organize these reunification rides. So they do a lot of fundraising, and they help bring families together. So 80% of women in this correctional facility downstate, Logan Correctional Center, are mothers, and 40% of them come from Cook County. And Logan Correctional Facility is an hour away drive from Cook County, and a lot of people who have parents in the prison don't have a way to get there. So this group is always organizing events to get kids to visit their moms. That connection is so important at a young age for both the mothers and the kids. So they come up with different events to try to keep these families together, even though these mothers are incarcerated. So for Halloween, they just like tweeted out, hey, we need some candy. We want to let the kids go trick-or-treating with their moms at the prison. And Chicagoans just overwhelmingly responded, sending like all of the candy they needed, like almost immediately. There's a great author, Eve Ewing, and she retweeted their plea for candy, and I think that really put them over the finish line.
You know, so, and I used, in full disclosure, I used to work for DNA Info, and when I would advocate for the work that you guys we were doing and now continue to do with Block Club Chicago, is like, I don't want to say that like DNA Info and now Block Club Chicago only covered the good news, but it is a great place where you do get a lot of good news. I think at least the balance of good news versus bad news is a little bit more accurate to the amount of good news versus bad news that's out there. We get a lot of good news in the city, and we need to tell these stories.
Exactly. I think that a big thing we've heard from people is, you know, we're so tired of our neighborhoods being represented in a negative way, especially neighborhoods on the south and west sides. And we just think it's really important to highlight the good things that people are doing in these neighborhoods. So that is a goal of ours. That is part of our mission. And we believe it's just telling the truth about Chicago. Chicago isn't this horrible hellhole that people make it out
right
to be in national media.
And national leaders as well. I won't name names, though. We're just going to keep on moving on here. Another Block Club Chicago story that'll make people smile. Just a couple months ago now, I dressed up as Dwight and Phyllis at an office pop-up bar, and the folks at Replay are at it again, and they're really tapping into some nostalgia from the 90s.
So I'm a huge Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan.
That does not surprise me at all.
I may have squealed when we got this press release. But, you know, Replay, we've gotten a huge response from our readers who are really excited about these pop-ups. So we've been keeping everybody in the loop about them. And this month, they are going to be dressing up as Buffy the Vampire Slayer. There's going to be the Bronze, which is the nightclub that the characters in Buffy hung out at, oddly, because they were in high school. And I guess I didn't have a high school nightclub, but they did. And all of the bands from the 90s have made an appearance on the show. They're going to have a Sunnydale High School library section and a cemetery. There's going to be a magic shop and special cocktails and trivia and karaoke. So if you're a Buffy fan, I would head in. It's going to be going on all month from October 12th through the 27th.
Can I reveal something to you, Jen? I've never seen an episode straight through. And I didn't have cable growing up, so I had like the WB and that was it. And I still never watch them. But I've heard that it's so underrated that it is actually a really well-written and put-together show.
It is, and it speaks to a lot of issues that are like modern and facing women, and it just tackles really adult themes, but in an approachable way. I actually never started watching it until my 30s. My best friend was really into it and was like, you know, we can't be friends anymore if you don't watch Buffy. So I watched it and I just was totally hooked. So it's really smart, really funny. Joss Whedon is brilliant, brilliant writer, and the characters are great. And, you know, that 90s nostalgia is back, so now's the time to
get there. And the pop-up opens up on October 12th. All right, last but not least, talking about bars, you know, obviously there's been more and more studies about how much damage we're doing to our ears, whether it be through the headphones that we're wearing or just the loud commotion around us. But now there's a new app that's might help us out a little bit, Jen?
Yes, so it's called Soundprint, and it was created by a man in New York who had some hearing loss problems, and he was trying to date, you know, doing online dating and meeting women at different places around town, and realized that he like couldn't hear them at so many places. So he decided to kind of rate, he created this app on his phone where he can rate how loud, how many decibels each place was. And he created this app, and it's just rolling out in Chicago, where users can click a button, measure how loud it is in the place they're at, and then kind of crowdsource that to the app. So they could say, you know, I'm in Park and Field, for example, which is over in Logan Square, is one of the loudest bars in Chicago. So if you are looking to have a quiet date with someone, maybe don't go to Park and Field. If you want to holler with your friends and play games on the patio, that's the place to be. But it's really interesting. Some coffee shops, obviously, one for the quietest places in Chicago. But if you are looking for a quiet date spot, I would check it out. It has 550 submissions at 450 Chicago venues so far.
It's amazing because I imagine that a bar owner, you know, there's some advantage to being the place that is quiet enough to have a date, but you don't want to be like the place that has absolutely no sound whatsoever. Like that it's just dead empty.
Right, where it's awkward. It is it's a delicate balance.
Okay.
And there are audio experts who are good at figuring that stuff out. Yeah. So.
And we are not of them.
Because people do avoid places if they're too loud.
No, absolutely.
So,
it's good to know before you go there. Before you spend $20 on an Uber to go a place, it's better to know ahead of time. Okay, Jen, that's all the time I got for you today. And I know you guys have had a busy, busy day. I really appreciate the conversation. One more time, can you remind people where they can find these great stories and how they can get more information?
BlockClubChicago.org. And check us out. And we think you'll really like us.
Keep on fighting the good fight, Jen, okay?
Thank you so much, John.
Plenty more coming up on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, by the way, coming up, the stories that matter with Roger Badish from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Before the stories that matter, certainly a few more that don't. Roger, I teed this up earlier.
Yeah, you did.
This is a funny little story. It's cute
weird.
And also horrifying. But
yes.
You ever wonder where all your money went? Well, I wonder that all the time, Roger. But
wait,
that has nothing to do with this
money?
Story.
But that's okay.
A couple of football fans of the University of Utah, they were saving all this money and cash to pay for their season tickets. I believe one of their parents had bought the tickets, and they were going to hand over $1,060 in cash.
That's a lot of money.
It is. They'd been saving it for a long time, and they've been looking for it. They couldn't find the money where they had saved it. And it turns out the mystery was solved when they found the envelope and the cash that that was inside the envelope in the bottom of a shredder.
Dun, dun, dun.
A shredder. They're 2-year-old.
We're not talking about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle shredder.
No, we are talking about...
This is a mechanical device.
That was one of your worst jokes of all time, Roger Badish, but I appreciate the effort.
Thank you.
Bottom of a shredder, a 2-year-old found the envelope and was playing with the shredder and shredded $1,060. Wow. It got me thinking. Now, there's good news here. People would try to set up a GoFundMe, but the couple says that they're talking with the folks at the Treasury Department that they're going to try and tape some of this together.
Huh, what?
They might be able to, because if there were some $100 bill, you know, the Treasury Department's working on to try and reimburse them or figure out a way to make this work.
You use a shredder. I've got one sitting right next to my chair at home.
What's wrong with the Treasury Department trying to help them out, Roger? Well, that's nice.
Fine, but the shredder it shreds it into such small pieces.
Yeah, well, for $1,000, I'll tape together some money, trust me. Anyways, I was wondering, Roger, yes. if I've got one story for you, if this helps jog your memory. I know that you try and block out the childhood years of your kids.
What about me?
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, look, I was the goody two shoe in my family for the most part. I got a lot of trouble for talking back. I was like the talker in the family, and I'd argue with my parents. But I didn't do anything wrong. I was always fearful of getting in trouble. But my older brother has stories like this. Things, not shredding $1,000, but close enough.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time, and I'll share one story. My brother was older than this. He was probably 10 or 11, so he knew good from bad.
Okay.
I was at the zoo with my friends. My parents were out for the day. My older brother and my younger brother were being babysat by one of the neighbors. And I came home from the zoo, and I'll never forget, as we made the corner, turned to the corner of the cul-de-sac, the smell of smoke coming somewhere in the neighborhood. And we turned the corner, and I'm just thinking, oh, this is scary. And I turned the corner, and there's smoldering smoke from coming from our property.
Oh, no.
And I'm wondering, this is scary. Well, we pull up to the house, and there's the babysitter. There's my older brother. The only thing missing was our front lawn. What? Our front green grass lawn was completely scorched.
Oh, gone. My goodness.
A gigantic, 25 by 30-foot hole in the front lawn. I don't know exactly how big it was, but the front lawn was gone.
The meteor rock landed on it and blew it up?
And there was Michael, my older brother, standing there with this look of pure guilt. Now, keep in mind, my parents were gone. So the babysitter decides to call. I don't know if they had the mobile phone or maybe they had arranged a phone call during the day. And my parents ask the babysitter, how's everything going back at home today? And the baby says, it's fine. Drew, the younger brother, he's sleeping fine. Yeah. Diapers changed. Mm-hmm. There was a small fire, which is never what you want to hear, I imagine, as a parent when you're talking to the babysitter. There was a small fire.
Okay.
Keep my dad mind. My dad's a fire chief, and so my dad says, "A small fire where?" And the babysitter says, "Why don't you guys just come on home and see?" This was in the heat of the summer, and for the rest of the summer, we didn't have a front lawn because my older brother was lighting fireworks in the middle of a drought.
Oh no!
On a bone dry front lawn. It caught fire. The better part of the story is the excuses he tried to come up with. He said that he had a magnifying glass out and was playing in the front lawn, and that lit things on fire. Then he said some neighbors threw some firecrackers onto the front lawn and drove away. They sped away. It was a drive-by firecracking up the front lawn. But instead, it was just him. And I guess the true rim shot of the story comes about 15, 20 years later, where you can guess. Can you guess the profession of my older brother?
Fireman.
He's a fireman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, he lit the front lawn on fire.
Was he bad on two parts, not just setting the lawn on fire? Was he not supposed to be playing with the fireworks?
Yes, of course not.
And oh, there you go.
Of course you're not supposed to play with fireworks. If you're going to do it, don't do it on a bone-dry lawn. But my parents were so embarrassed. I mean, my dad, my dad is into landscaping, and my parents, take pride in their front yard. Sure. And just imagine the rest of the neighborhood, pristine yards.
Yeah.
And then it's just scorched earth in the middle.
Is your brother still paying for the resodding of the yard?
No, but he's still paying for it. We still talk about it to this day. But it's interesting. He also lit fireworks in his room off one time. That was
in the room.
In the room. Yeah, lit the carpet on fire. Nice. So a little theme going on here.
Well, I'll do a quick one because I've got really a whole quick, list. Yeah. Real quick. So I love electronics.
Yeah.
And I love radio. So I have a big clock radio in my room, and I wanted to see how it worked. So I'm sitting on the edge of my bed, and I pop off that little cardboard backing. You can kind of snap it out of the... Now, we're talking 60s, so I'm about maybe 9, 10 years old, maybe, early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at it, and I have my trusty metal screwdriver in my hand. And I'm going, I wonder what would happen if I touched this spot with that. The next thing I know, I'm lying on the floor. And my dad's standing over me saying, quote unquote, what the hell did you do? Literally.
Really gave you a shock.
I shocked me out cold off the bed and blew every circuit in the house. And that's just one of many.
Boys will be boys. Here are the sounds that matter. The top five at five from the Rogue Con Show with Anna DeVlantes. Week this afternoon on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by VictoryAutoWreckers.com. Put down the screwdriver, Roger. And here's the news. Oh, nice best friend song here on 720 WGN. Good morning, everyone. John Hansen in for Matt Bubala on this Saturday morning, 4:06. And speaking of best friends, you know, I've got a best friend and we do things together. We get to see each other a couple times a year. He lives on the suburbs. I live in the city. But we are certainly not as accomplished as the two best friends we're about to chat with, who met right before college on a prospective weekend. And it's led to a journey which has now continued into a business. And even though they are separated by the suburbs and the city right now, they're still connected through their awesome business. So we're talking to two doctors right now. And first up, we have Gamali Dekai. Did I say that right? Oh, let me turn on your microphone. That helps, doctor. And also joining us over the phone, we have Chantal Stevens-Archer. Chantal, can you hear us?
Good morning. Yes. Not I can hear you just fine.
I love how you guys are such good best friends that even though you guys are separated and you guys are going to be able to hear each other, you're also doing a Google Hangout right now so you can see each other while you guys chat. You guys truly are best friends, and you started a business called Quench Wellness. Let's talk about Quench first because I want to make sure everyone understands exactly what you're doing.
Sure.
So, do you prefer Dr. Dekai?
No, Dr. Gamali is
Dr.
fine.
Gamali.
Even Gamali is just fine.
All right, Gamali, what do you got going on with Quench Wellness on the South Loop?
Yeah, I mean, we're so happy to be in the South Loop. We opened Quench Wellness in the middle of July, and it's a holistic practice. I'm an emergency medicine physician by practice, and Dr. Chantal is an internist, and we just kept seeing that there were just more and more health issues. People were getting prescribed more and more medications or bigger dosages, as opposed to going back to what was natural and healthy, which really is our diet, our exercise, our sleep, and what we're taking into our bodies. And so we specialize in IV vitamin infusions and really restoring the body with what it really needs to function at its best level.
Chantal, I imagine that working with your best friend is a lot of joyous occasions, but opening any business is a grind. How have you found the experience so far?
Man, it's challenging on a whole different level.
Not because of me.
No, of course not. No.
I mean, that's saying a lot because we both went through medical school together, and that's not easy either, but it's different because with medical school, you have kind of a roadmap, you know, you go to class, you pass the test, you move on, you do residency, you learn the stuff, you know, and then you become a doctor. It's very easy to figure it out. But with this business, man, it's you're not really sure the right steps to become successful, but we know that we're passionate. We know we love what we do. And the thing is, we really understand each other and respect each other. And I couldn't choose a better person to do it with.
Oh, you guys are making me smile here. Your practice is located at 1319 South Michigan Avenue. And Gamali, you were telling me it's kind of like a medical row down there.
Yeah, it's a very, very nice little health hub with some other local fitness and wellness companies. And so we were actually really ready once we got into the neighborhood to really get to know them and partner with them, because we all do something different and we're all able to provide different services to our clientele. And so we actually are joining together to have a wellness crawl on October 27th. It's a South Loop wellness crawl.
See, I'm used to bar crawls, which is about the opposite of wellness crawl, but maybe a little mental health wellness. But
yeah.
So what's going to happen at the event?
So we're actually partnering with, like I said, a few of the businesses there to be able to provide provide mini classes as well as B12 intramuscular injections, stretch sessions, and then, of course, an after party at one of the local breweries down there.
You guys both have really fascinating... Oh, it does end at a brewery. Good. Oh, I was just making sure. Okay, well, now I'm in. Chantal, you both have very interesting backgrounds. I want to get to both of them. Chantal, you are a Whitney Young graduate, right? From the Ashburn neighborhood. Oh, there you go. Southside representing. You stayed down there, University of Chicago. Walk us through your journey to get where you are today.
Yeah, I started off as a Dolphin at Whitney Young. Made the realization sometime around my junior year that I wanted to find a career in which I can help people. I can use my strong background in math and sciences, and I can just serve my community. Well, what better job than becoming a doctor? And so I just made that decision at that point in time. That is what best suited all the things I wanted out of life. And I just went forward from there. Ended up at University of Chicago, just kind of at a visitation prospective student weekend. Met Dr. G there, and we were roommates ever since then.
I like Dr. G. That's a great name. I like that nickname.
Thank you.
We were roommates ever since then for like 6 years after that, 4 years through college, then even in medical school, roommates together. And we went through all of our classes together, even the weed out courses, mm-hmm. general chemistry or organic chemistry, which kind of weeded out a lot of people.
Right. it weeded me out just hearing the name of the course. So, you know what I find fascinating, Chantal, is that your father's from Barbados, right? Mm-hmm. And your mother from Guyana. And Dr. G, you're from Ghana. Isn't it amazing the journeys, the happenstances that happen as people transverse our globe to bring two people together that obviously have such a great connection? I mean, Dr. G, you must have this, feel at least blessed to have someone, a partner in crime to go through this life with.
Absolutely. And it's so funny because when we first met each other, like, I didn't really like her very much.
Really?
Yes.
What?
Because, you know, I was a suburban girl. She mm-hmm. was a city girl. And we were just like so different without realizing actually like how similar we were. And so we had decided that, okay, if we're both going to go to University of Chicago, then we're going to go ahead and be roommates. And, you know, 17 years later, here we are.
I imagine, you know, it's interesting opening a business with such a good friend, you know, because obviously there's hard times in business. It's mm-hmm. a struggle. And, you know, you might have competing ideas at certain times. Mm-hmm. Chantal, I imagine communication between the two of you. You obviously have great communication, but that's got to be key in any big decisions that you guys have to come up with.
Mm-hmm. I think the key to our friendship and also the key to this business endeavor is just respect. It always has come down to that. We actually, even though we're both doctors, we have different elements of each other. I'm usually the calculated one, knowing the inside, all the details of what's going on. She's very much the creative spirit out of the two of us, really finding a way to kind of bring whatever idea we have to life. And we work within our strengths. We work within what we know how to do really well. And we talk about those things. So whenever there's a big decision, you know, I have my opinion already. We both are very strong-willed and have an opinion. And we talk about it. And we always make whatever is the best decision for the business. And we respect one another's ideas. And I think that's why this will always be successful, because of that spirit that we have.
Gamalee, I want to ask about the Quench Wellness a little bit more mm-hmm. about it. So you mentioned the word holistic. And I know a lot of listeners, when they hear the word holistic, they do a little bit of an eye roll. Maybe they don't understand it. Maybe they've heard different things about it that they don't necessarily believe. Make the argument for why people should be paying more attention to holistic care and why that is important as we move forward.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a balance. There's nothing wrong. If you need medications, if you need surgery, if you need traditional medical care, that's 100% fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But we also have to acknowledge that the things that we put into our bodies, the way that we live our lives, the things that we decide to put in our minds and the words that we speak, the way that we live also affects our health too. So it's just an argument for trying to balance both. And if you feel that you need to be on medications, well, why not also try infusions? Why not also try meditation? Why not also try yoga? You know, so try it and see what works for you. And sometimes you have to also eliminate one thing to see if the other thing works, you know?
And I feel like with so many things, we try and attack the physical symptoms mm-hmm. of things without really paying attention to the entire body and really becoming at peace with certain things and moving forward that way. I got to ask Chantal, is this at all where you pictured your life going when you started in medicine?
No. But
that's both of you.
Even when we were in college, we weren't just kind of pre-med students, we always had some other endeavor that we're always working on. I know for myself, I danced professionally before I even started becoming a doctor and studying medicine, so dance was always an important part of my life. And I know for Dr. G, she's an amazing artist and paints and does all this great stuff. So we always had other parts of our personalities, and so we always knew that just becoming a doctor and working traditionally wasn't the only way to do things. There's a bigger way to reach a larger audience and really get out the message of how important it is to prevent illnesses before they even start. That's really where all of this is coming from, is making a huge change in our community in a positive direction.
Yeah, we're so reactive with healthcare. It should be preventative on the front end of things. That's going to, not only is that going to save you from ailments or from concerns, but also just it'll save our entire system billions of dollars if we can take care of things a little bit earlier.
Exactly.
Quench Wellness at 1319 South Michigan. So, you know, for our listeners out there wondering, is that for me? Dr. G, what sort of patients are you looking for? What sorts of concerns might people have that might lead them to Quench Wellness?
Sure. So, you know, at Quench, we welcome everyone. You know, education is a big part of what we do. So even if you just want to come in and, you know, ask some questions about the services that we offer, which also include hormone optimization and vaginal laser therapy, you know, you can come on in and we can speak to you. But we really are looking for people who are health conscious, health minded, you know, that are able to tolerate getting infusions of vitamins as well as fluid. So we, you know, are looking for people that are pretty healthy, but also are trying to do more for themselves. And you will be surprised. Something as simple as being dehydrated can make you feel awful. So you might feel fatigued, you might feel tired, not know why. You may be living a busy lifestyle, traveling a lot, and you don't know what's going on. You can come in and then we can definitely chat with you and try to figure out if your lifestyle could be contributing to some of the symptoms that you're having.
That's interesting. Again, it's part of that whole body thing that if we don't really take a good self look at what we're doing and how we live our lives, we might miss a lot of things and symptoms and signs along the way.
Exactly.
All right, Chantel, who was the better student in med school?
Oh, whoa. He took it there.
Me?
He took it there.
Dr. G, do you agree?
Absolutely not.
who had the higher GPA? Or is there GPA in med school or what?
We both passed, and we are both physicians at the end of the day.
So what's it like, I mean, working, I mean, it must give you that extra motivation to be able to work with your best friend. I mean, really, I mean, I mentioned the difficulties that could come with that and the disagreements and that sort of thing. But man, when the going gets tough, to have someone that, you know, you've held your hand with a long time and you know each other, that must make it easier and just more exciting to tackle each day.
Yeah, I mean, we're accountability partners. So whether we're doing Quench or our other company, Besties MD, whether it's making sure that we're working out, whether it's being good partners in our relationships, you know, we hold each other accountable. And I think that is something that everyone needs. It really allows us to live a life really full of integrity and honesty, because I know that she knows what my best looks like, just, you know, vice versa. As well.
Chantel, now you live in the suburbs, so you guys have done the switch. Suburbs is now cities, cities now suburbs.
Isn't it funny how life works out?
It really is. And I love Elmhurst. I'm from Downers Grove originally, so I know the western suburbs pretty well. Chantel, make the case for anyone listening right now why they should check out Quench Wellness.
You should check out Quench Wellness if you're really into restoring your mind-body connection. It's all about taking medicine to the next step, focusing on preventative care, and being economically sound and responsible. We're here to help you with IV vitamins and nutrients, and you will feel so much better once you restore and rebalance your body. We also provide vaginal laser therapy as well as hormone optimization, and we're here just to allow you to live the best version of yourself in all forms.
That's a really good way to put it. Yeah. All right, Gamalee, what's your favorite thing about Chantel? I'm feeling like we need some positive. I'm trying to spread some more positivity, and we're 50,000 watts now, so people are hearing us in 38 states and Canada.
Wow.
So we're trying to, you know, the news cycles these days, it can bring people down. Let's get some positive. Talk about your best friend, why you love her.
It's funny because when I first met her, she wasn't a mother, but I've been fortunate to see her raise her two girls, and just how patient she is with them and loving and consistent and dedicated. I mean, it's a true example, and she's definitely, I mean, I don't have kids yet, but when that time comes, I know I'm going to learn a lot from how I've seen her with her girls.
Oh, that was sweet. All right, Chantel, that's a tall order. Now you got to give some compliments back.
Order. I don't know. How do I just choose one, though? That's the challenge.
Oh, look at that. There you go.
There are many things. things I think are great about her. One thing for sure is she's so level-headed. I mean, the approach.
She's laughing
problem,
at that right now.
I know probably on the inside she's probably going crazy, but she appears and carries herself with such grace, and she's so level-headed. So whenever there's a disaster happening, she's always the first one that's like, it's okay. We've got this. Let's put this strategy together, and we've got this A, B, and C. So she always kind of restores the peace within any chaotic situation, personal or business.
I guess that's why I chose ER, huh?
Yeah, right. Chaos. Yes, exactly. Someone that can focus through that, exactly. Yeah. You guys are really an inspirational couple of best friends, and I think that in all, like I mentioned, the negativity around some of the news we have today, and you're making me want to call my best friend and just give them a call, and all our listeners too. You know, whether you plan on opening a business with them or just having a drink or having a bite with them, just reach out to your best friend and make sure you say hello and to remind them why you love him or her. Guys, thank you so much for stopping by today, and remind people, Dr. G, the website and where people can find out more information.
Yes, you can find us online at quenchwellness.com, as long as along all social media streams under Quench Wellness as well.
And we also have a text saying you should open up a place up in Oak Brook.
Hey.
So second location.
Great.
People are already looking for
that's
it.
That's fantastic. We love that idea.
Yeah. There you go. Chantel, thanks so much for your time, okay?
Thank you.
And Dr. G, you as well, okay?
Thank you so much.
Plenty more coming up on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. John Hansen in for Matt Bubala for another 34 minutes or so. And Roger, I know you were busy getting the news ready, but those last two best friends, that's a tough thing to run a business with your best friend. Those two have got the chemistry that'll make
they
it work.
They sound like they're having a blast second. Yes.
I feel bad because I have a best friend who I grew up with since we were like two or three. And he moved out to the suburbs. He's got a great wife. They got a kid. And I just need to really make that extra effort. We've been trying to plan a lunch, and we keep on going back and forth on it. Got to get that nailed down, though, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm in the same boat. I've got so many people that I've reconnected with since high school.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the social media thing is just fantastic.
Yeah, it is. And if nothing else, you at least know what's going on in their lives so that when you see each other for the first time in a long time, you get updated. It was nice to hear that positivity. You know, Roger, it's been such a, we talk about the Van Dyke trial, whichever way you fell on, how you think that verdict should have turned out. Just a tense day. Obviously, we had the nomination process of Judge Brett Kavanaugh. And again, whichever way you fall in the political spectrum, it was certainly a messy situation and really caused a lot of anguish both sides of the political aisle. And man, we do have a lot of negative feelings overwhelming our country right now. And it's just nice to be reminded that at the end of the day, we are just a bunch of kind of people living on this. I'm getting really hippy dippy right here, Roger.
Yeah,
but we're people together. You know what I mean? Like,
I understand completely what you mean. It's for a news junkie like me, it's been a very hectic week, and seeing as how I'm only here three nights a week, we talked about this a long time ago tonight. I've been at home chomping at the bit, wanting to get into the newsroom and go out on the streets and everything, and it's really hard for me to pull myself away from that and try to carry on with my life. At the stage of my life, I have that opportunity through most of the week to do that. But there are some people that grind it out day and night, Monday through Friday, some 7 days a week.
Right.
And they don't have that opportunity to pull themselves away for that breath of fresh air, to smell the roses, to be reminded that there is more to life than what is being thrown at us, especially this past week.
Yeah, so hopefully everyone can call up your best friend or your brothers or your sisters, moms and dads, kids, just connect with them in the next few days. Saturday's a perfect day to do that. Do it today.
Yeah.
Hey, Roger, you were a CPS teacher, right?
Yes, I was.
So after the news, we're going to be talking with a writer for Chicago Reader. This article was fascinating to me about something that I had never heard of happening. Obviously, I knew the late 60s were a time of demonstration, protest, and change all across the country, but it was a giant 1968, 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. 35,000 Chicago students walked out of their classrooms in protest, and they changed CPS forever. That's the headline of the story, and I'm really fascinated to chat through this one, so we're going to do that in just a little bit. But the time right now is 4:30 on the dot, which means it's news time, and Roger, take it away. 720 WGN, John Hanson in for Matt Mubala here for another 25 minutes or so. Chicago Reader is one of my favorite things to read. That's really well said, John. Way to go, me. And I came across a really fascinating article about some student-led protests back in 1968 in CPS school. I was kind of blown away by the magnitude of the walkout, 35,000 students walking out of CPS classrooms and the changes that they were able to make 50 years ago. And joining me now is the writer of the article, Tanner Howard. You're joining us now. Tanner, first of all, thanks so much for coming in today. We appreciate it.
Of course. I'm just
so early in the morning.
Yeah.
You're wearing a Rockies hat, so we're still letting you in. That's okay. You were at the Brewers-Rockies game yesterday, right?
I was indeed. I'm just glad that that the whole Chicago area is not a mess right now because the Cubs are in the playoff. I'm just going to say that, honestly.
All right, that's fine. All right, we'll let you stay here and talk about this article. Okay, so I'm a student of history. I know a lot about, of course, the 1963 protests, obviously, 1968. Of course, a transformative year here, not only in Chicago, but nationwide. But I never heard about this CPS walkouts that happened in October of 1968. Walk us through your discovery of finding out about these walkouts.
Yeah, for sure. So a couple months ago, I guess in April or so, my parents were actually visiting Chicago, and we made it down to the Hull House, which I'd never been to before. It was really exciting just to go there, and I'd been meaning to do that for a long time. And they had an exhibit, I think, around sort of like Chicago schools and these different things. And there was this poster, this really incredible, very psychedelic poster, you know, seemed very much like a sort of late 60s kind of print. But it was actually about these protests, and it was really informative. There was basically a photograph of a bunch of students in their lunchroom basically going on strike and saying, you know, that they wanted something better. And then there's all this text at the bottom that sort of gives a very, you know, even more than this article, a synopsis version of what happened. And basically it was students at Harrison High School first, and then a lot of other places. Harrison High School is sort of down in, like, near West Side. Mm-hmm. Had enough. You know, they were Black and Latino students primarily in the school, and they just didn't feel that they were getting, they didn't have enough Black and Latino teachers, they didn't have multilingual education, and so they went on strike, and a couple students were, you know, they were, wow, I'm very tired.
That's okay. Arrested, I'm sure, or taken?
Yeah, yeah, a couple students were arrested. But I guess to your question of discovery, so I found out about the poster, and then immediately I was like, wow, I need to start looking up stuff.
Right.
And other than a couple, maybe like two dissertations, one which was turned into a book, and maybe one or two other article, you know, academic articles about this, there's no sort of journalistic, historical journalistic look at this. You know, I mean, there's stuff in the archives, obviously, from when it was happening. But other than that, there really wasn't much.
There was no 20th anniversary written in Tribune or anything like that. Yeah,
seemingly not. So I was, thankfully, there was an event a couple weeks ago at the Uri Eichen Gallery down in Pilsen, where they actually had a couple of the people that I interviewed in the article that were speaking, and they had photographs that one of them had collected sort of on the walls. And so that I went to that event to get to meet some more of the folks that were involved, and basically from there I was able to interview them and then write the story.
What I find interesting is the evolution of the walkouts, that they obviously, like many demonstrations, they start smaller and they grow larger and larger. And some of the stuff was festering even in the earlier 60s, in 1963, there were some big CPS walkouts. I mean, you mentioned some of the complaints that some of the students had, but these were wide. These were not only specific, but this was also about the segregationist school system.
Yeah.
Mayor Daley the First, his very segregationist school. I can't think of the name here. Superintendent of schools.
Yeah, Ben Willis.
In fact, what did they call the trailers?
The Willis wagons.
The Willis wagons. That some of these students in the overcrowded schools, they had to be educated in wagons. So walk us through some maybe the numbers or just the evolution of how quickly this thing grew.
Oh, it was really quick. I mean, but you're right, like, to recognize that there is a sort of longer history there. And I think it also is, it's interesting because it in many ways mirrors some of the larger sort of, you know, changes in these debates and sort of actions. So 63 is largely teacher-led, teacher and parent-led. It's still massive, you know, more than 100,000, I think a lot more than that, go out on strike for, you know, a day to sort of protest things. But by 68, this movement is actually pretty much entirely student-led. It's student-oriented. And rather than being integrationists, you know, not necessarily they were opposed to integrating into you know, largely empty white schools in Chicago, but more than anything, they were just saying, no, like, our schools can be still, you know, mostly black, but we'd still, you know, we deserve more. We don't deserve to have the shoddy treatment that we're getting. And so that, you know, again, reflecting the larger sort of emphasis on black power, on multiracial organizing. So that, I think that was really remarkable, again, to learn about. And I think, too, there was a just an incredible shift, and it happened so quickly.
Yeah.
When I talked to the couple of people that I interview in this article, it's just within a matter of weeks. And again, they're thinking about it over the summer. Pomone Remy and Maseko Myers, who are actually now married.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they went to a Black Power conference that summer in 1968 in Philly, and they actually co-led a discussion, like, amongst student, you know, like, high school students at that conference. And at this time, they're already thinking, you know, we need to figure out how to get people together. And then sort of independently on the west side at Harrison, and on the same day at Austin High School, there's these actions. And then very quickly.
And this is in September at first, right?
Yeah,
mid-September. Yeah. So school's just back in session,
yeah.
And they've maybe had some time to organize this a week or two into the school year.
Mm-hmm.
So they start in mid-September, and they do a demonstration, but it's smaller in scale.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so they, yeah, there's a couple students that sort of lead this, but a couple hundred students in Harrison are, you know, are striking. The two main leaders, Sherrone Mathews and Victor Adams, are both suspended for a couple weeks. And then when they come back is when things really sort of explode. So in that period, while they're waiting, I guess, or while they're sort of thinking through things.
Yes, when they have time on their hands, yes.
Yeah, they're meeting with the folks on the south side, with Pomone Remy and Maseko Myers and everyone else. And so then the day before the first major walkout, which had at least 35,000.
Wow.
And it might have been more, I will say. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to put in a bigger number because that's what I found reported, but Sherrone Mathews thought it was severely underreported. She was suggesting as high as 80,000. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's good reason to believe that it was probably underreported. Right?
What did this walkout look like? So what was the day of the 35,000? I don't have it in front of me, but
yeah,
it was in October here. I think it was in early middle October. And 35,000, is it a matter of it at a certain time of the day they walked out of the classroom? Did they hold up signs? Did they chant? Like, what did it kind of feel and look like?
So it was really truly incredible. I think the date was October 14th was, I think, the first citywide march. I might be looking at the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, you have students, you know, again, primarily on the south and the west sides, although a little bit was happening, I think, at, like, Lakeview High School, if I remember correctly. But basically, what's incredible is the students from each of the individual schools, you know, and they're, some of them are several miles apart.
Very far away, yeah.
Yeah, are still coming together and meeting along the way and marching to a common destination. And so they're meeting, again, I can't remember the exact details, but they're meeting in, like, you know, just sort of like giant theaters on the south and west sides for rallies at the end of it. And so you had actually major speakers come and rally them at the end of it. And so, but then there's other protests. And again, I wish... I guess they just couldn't get clearance for the photographs, but there's a photo that I mentioned in here of a couple of the protesters rallying down at the Board of Education. That was one of the destinations for one of the protests. And they get down there, and they had a mock funeral for the Board of Education. They had this little cheap wooden plywood coffin, and they ceremoniously bring it out, and then a couple of them just jump on it. And then smash it to pieces. And the photograph, there's a photograph of it that ran in Jet magazine that was in the exhibit at Uri Eichen. And it's just incredible.
Yeah. So what I find interesting is just to put it, obviously these things don't exist in vacuums. We're talking about 1968. Mm-hmm. You have RFK killed, you have Martin Luther King first killed in April.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Kennedy killed in June.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of momentum to this. Mm-hmm. And of course, young people were, of course, leading the way on many of these mm-hmm. changes. Did they talk about that, or was this a separate fight on their own? Or is this part of the broader movement that the left had, and the progressive causes have been going under?
It's a good question. I mean, I think, yeah, I think the students were really responding to what was happening around them. And I think what's so incredible is that they, again, they didn't need anybody else to tell them that things were wrong. You know, they're 15, 16, 17, but they already can sense that their schools don't have the resources that they deserve, that things can be changed and they should change. And so, yeah, it was really, truly student-led. But, yeah, I mean, one of the things I talked about with some of the folks is just the fact that, obviously, just a month before is 68 in the convention in Chicago, something I've also written about recently. And things, you know, that has such a huge, huge, huge historical memory, whereas this doesn't.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, that's for a lot of reasons. A lot more people were
TV
here.
TV cameras here. Exactly.
But I think that it's a shame that this history has not been remembered nearly as much, and I'm just excited to get to be a part of helping people remember it.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and I hope that you could kind of explain some of the changes that did come, because you mentioned in the headline, or whoever wrote the headline for you, that it did change CPS. In which ways?
I mean, I think the biggest things were just, you know, fundamentally, you had schools, especially, so on the west side, you know, neighborhoods in 68 are still flipping over really quickly.
Quickly, yes.
Yeah, there's still a lot of racial change, and a lot of the schools are not representative of that. So I mentioned, you know, Austin High School had one black teacher out of about 150, even though the school is at this point more than 50% black. And so very quickly, again, one of the major demands that students had was just simply more black and Latino teachers and administrators.
Diversity in leadership, yeah.
Yeah, because, again, down at Harrison, where there was a small percentage of Latino students across the city were being put in remedial classes just because they weren't being educated in their own language. And so, of course, you know, students were able, basically, to get a lot of principals fired. It's funny, Sharon Matthews said that she thought that was a win. It was actually because the principals were not doing a good enough job quelling the dissent.
Really?
That's partially why they got fired, not because of a proactive sort of thing.
Hey, ends to means, I guess.
Yeah. So, I mean, so that's
one
thing.
Or means to ends, I should say.
Yeah. That's one piece. But, I mean, then, you know, beyond that, they did get more black and Latino teachers. They got more ethnic studies curriculums, clubs, you know, classes.
Sports teams.
Harrison, the soccer team, won the state championship.
5 years later or something. Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah. And then a couple years later, and I think this is a really, I wish I had more words in the story to get to sort of unpack the Benito Juarez Community High School in Pilsen. So that school, again, was part of these demands. Harrison High School was really old, and even well before 68, there was a lot of pressure to close it. It was just sort of getting run down. At the same time, and as I do mention in the article a little bit, Benito Juarez High School today is almost exclusively Latino, whereas there's a school nearby that's almost exclusively black. And so it's just interesting, again, until 1972 or 73, Latino students were designated as white on a lot of, I think, on the census. And so that basically allowed the administration to integrate, quote unquote, these schools while still making it, you know, black and Latino students. And so, yeah, Benito Juarez High School is a response to protests and demands and a lot of organizing over many years, but it also allows the officials to sort of resegregate these different communities of color and to sort of maybe, again, kind of quiet some of this unrest.
Going back, somewhere in the story you mentioned about how one of the subjects that you talked to did attend a speech by Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
And while it was inspirational, he knew that there was a sort of a, I don't know how to say it, but there was not a completeness to it. Yeah, go on. Martin Luther King said something very specific that he knew would lead to a dangerous situation.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, Martin Luther King also knew he was doing it for a reason, that marching into the suburbs was going to cause some issues, was going to cause a lot of backlash. But yeah, I mean, like, it was really interesting to hear Pamon Remy talk about being so young and seeing him speaking and to recognize, again, how fraught this moment is and how dangerous that would have been, how dangerous it was, because they did go march and they did get a lot of violence directed at them.
There's parallels, of course, to what happened at the strike in 2012, the closing of 50 schools. At one point, they thought it might be 200. There was a lot of marching and protesting, strikes, of course, those sorts of things, demonstrations that led to that. It's interesting how Pamon, is that am I saying his name right?
Pamon, yeah.
Pamon, talks about the evolution, like he almost kind of hands the ball off to a new generation of people, recognizing that what we did, what they did 50 years ago was influential, it led to change, but that generation can't do this now.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It was, I will say, I mean, just so again, I sat down with both Pamon and Sharon Matthews for maybe like an hour and a half with each of them, and it was really beautiful, the way in which they described their own experiences in their youth and the way in which they were so gracious to me in terms of recognizing things that I'm doing and working on and saying it's you and it's people around you that are going to need to be the ones to carry this forward. They were incredibly aware of how much they did. And I think that their legacy is something that is really worth revisiting. And, again, I also, there's a quote from Pomona in here talking about how struggles that you fight for can be taken back and how he doesn't want to define his legacy and the legacy of this movement from what was taken back ultimately. And I think that's great. And it's not that they could have predicted 50 years of sort of further disinvestment in Chicago schools. It's not their fault at all that that happened. But what they did while they were young and while they had the energy and the momentum was really structurally transformative.
Teaching a new generation about the past is always important. I like the discussion that they have. I believe it's with a professor from the Art Institute about the idea of first source materials now being used to teach a new generation, not just being lectured to, but showing first source documents from this period to get them make an unbiased sort of decision on what they, or an interpretation of the time. Also mentioning first source documents, the fact that a lot of the numbers that we know and the facts come from FOIA requests from the FBI. Am I reading that correctly? That,
yeah.
That's how we know a lot about this protest.
Yeah.
Or demonstration.
Yeah, so Pomona actually sent me basically this massive full FOIA document that was someone very, he said this person wasn't one of the main student leaders, but was nearby, was attending all of the public meetings and was getting as much as they could. And it was really striking the level of detail they had. I mean, they had everyone's names, addresses, the schools they were at.
They were paying very close attention.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I think one of the dissertations that's been written about this, there's actually the sort of Red Squad files at the Chicago History Museum that are very hard to get access to. But that's how they were able to learn a little bit more about it. So, yeah, this movement was very heavily monitored, was very, was eventually sort of infiltrated. Again, to what degree it sort of changed things, hard to say exactly, but... Yeah, they saw what was happening, and they were pretty scared.
They were making waves. The artwork is gorgeous here. You mentioned something that they might be something that's on display or sale or
Nicole's print that sort of introduced me to the story. It's been around in a couple places. I saw it at the Whole House. I've also seen it at what's it called? The Co-Prosperity Sphere down in Bridgeport. There's also, I think, the Pilsen Open House, and Nicole will be presenting work at that in, I think, like 2 weeks or so.
Oh, that's great. Where can people find the story and more information about all the work you do, Tanner?
So the story is on the Reader's website, and there's the photograph. The print is not in the print edition. I guess it's too hard to print.
Right.
But yeah, that's online. And then you can follow me on Twitter, Tanner_Howard. I write about a lot of Chicago history and other things.
Tanner, thanks for getting up so early this morning.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping the Rockies make it a good series here. They got to win a couple in a row here. It's going back to Coors Field, though.
Yeah, they've got an uphill battle, but I'm still a believer.
Tanner, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll wrap things up next here on 720 WGN.